Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is actually not Lobo, it's Steve Gaddafi, and Herb Guy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing, friend?
Steve?
Yeah, good to talk to you, man. Yep, well, we're live on the radio, and later on, we've got Dr. Judy Wood coming in to talk to us, which is a bit of a treat, but for the first couple of minutes, half hour or so, or whenever Judy gets here, Herb Guy is going to be talking about setting up a intentional community, is that correct, Herb Guy?
Yeah.
Not an international community like I misread earlier. So do you want to tell us a bit about what an intentional community is?
For me, it's just about, corporate non-compliance, just getting out and living your life the way people would live their lives if they didn't have to,
go down the store and work and stuff,
work their lives away to buy groceries and pay rent and utilities and stuff, it just all seems pointless to me.
It does, yeah.
And so, I don't know, there's a lot of things that go along with that, I guess you want to be off-grid and you want to be growing your own food, which things like permaculture and things like that come into play. And I learned a lot of, I've had this idea for 4 years, and I've kind of been chasing after it in one way or another before I even knew that there were other people
Yeah, well, Friends of Freeman is definitely the sort of place to find people like that. And so what was your initial idea then, to sort of get a plot of land where people sort of club together and buy it, and then set up a sort of community from there where building homes on it and stuff like that? Actually making a kind of a regular town, but with everybody pulling together to share, to grow food and stuff like that, yeah?
I didn't really catch all of
that. Sorry, it's my accent, probably. No, what was your initial thought to purchase a piece of land where a lot of people could live on, building their own homes and stuff? I mean, we were talking earlier about, your sandbag houses or something, was that right? Your domes?
Yeah. Super adobe homes, yeah. There's a company called CalEarth Institute who developed these super adobe homes. It's basically just a long sandbag that you coil into a dome, and as you're coiling it, you're laying layers of barbed wire between layers of sandbag for tensile strength.
Okay,
and it's one of the strongest structures you can build. It's flood and hurricane proof and
waterproof. We have structures in the UK that are built out of straw bales. Have you seen these?
Yeah, I have.
You kind of get a big skew. You put straw bales together in a normal brick fashion, where you offset one over the other, and then you skewer them with sort of pegs. And apparently, that's the warmest house you can live in. This sandbag is a big, huge one, and it must be massive. Or is there many of them? Yeah.
I'm sure you'd end up using more than one. I haven't built one, but it seems. I've been studying it as much as I can, and it's about as straightforward a concept as you can come up with.
Hang on, Hebgat, are you right next to your microphone? Because there's a lot of sort of rustling and stuff going on. Can you stand back a little bit?
It kind of like touches my face. And
oh, does it? Okay, right. Oh, is it a sort of hands-free thing? Yeah, it's kind of like it's making a bit of an, I don't know if you can hear it in your side, but it's making a bit of a rustling noise. But yeah,
yeah,
so,
I didn't hear it. Beer must have been getting it.
Yeah, that's better. So, all
right.
Continue. What would you have, livestock and everything? Would it be like a town, or would it just be like a, you know, a kind of shanty settlement sort of thing?
I'm into anarchy, so
right.
You know, I just want to do my own thing and not be bothered, and
yeah.
I want to, but you know, I want to have the space for anybody else who feels moved to do the same thing, because I feel like there's a lot of people, because I talk about this wherever I go, I feel like there's a lot of people, there's a lot of eyes on me, you know,
uh-huh.
like waiting for me to actually like do
make
it
food,
and,
yeah.
and like not die.
yeah no,
but I'm confident it can be done. I mean, it seems like a more natural and secure way to do things to me. I'd feel way more secure, like, depending on myself than on the economy.
Yeah, sure. Well, definitely.
It's just a matter of... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was saying that definitely the way the economy's heading, this money's going to sort of implode any day now, isn't it? So we do need to do, or think along the lines of self-sustainability for sure.
Sorry, phone is ringing. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think investing in the economy is the smartest way to go.
No, certainly, sort of, certainly running out of ideas fast, isn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm really just at this stage, I have a bunch of ideas, but I'm still trying to get the opportunity to put them into practice. I actually found some people who are basically in the same place, ideologically speaking.
Uh-huh.
And I potentially have the ability to use 2 acres of their land,
right,
and get something going.
Uh-huh.
And that's really awesome.
Yeah.
Like, things are starting to get a little more tangible, but at the same time, I feel it's great that somebody extended this opportunity to me, but I feel like I want to at least try to have the opportunity to, like, be in the same place and give that opportunity to other people also.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people... And there's all kinds of ways that you could go about it. You know, I started my business to kind of toward that end.
Yeah, doing that sort of stuff.
What's your business? I have a website called newmoonsoapco.com.
All right, okay. And there's a link to that page, I take it, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
And that's not really even paying the bills, but I mean,
yeah.
it's something I thought of
uh-huh.
that might work. So, you know, I set it up and just kind of let it do its thing. And then
yeah.
I was inspired also when I heard about the Bundan land gift movement. There's a guy named Vinoba Babe in, if that's how you pronounce it, I think that's mm-hmm. right. In India in the 1950s, and he was a disciple of Gandhi, and after Gandhi died, he went around on foot just soliciting land donations from people who had more land than they were using.
Right, yeah.
And they ended up, they created a whole movement out of it. They ended up procuring over 5 million acres of land.
Wow.
In India.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, that's one way to go, and people, I mean, it seems like a long shot, but there's a precedent for it.
Yeah, there certainly is, yeah. I mean, obviously I don't really know what's going down in the States sort of thing, but definitely people are getting poorer over here, and pretty soon they're going to have to realize they're going to have to fend for themselves in some kind of way. Okay, we've got another caller here, guys. Do you mind if I just see who this is, yeah?
Yeah,
sure.
Hello, you're area code 573. You're on the Type 1 Radio Lounge with Steve and Herb Guy.
Hey, it's Carolyn. I just think this is an interesting topic. I came in a little early. If you want to, permaculture, I think it's some great stuff that he's talking about. This is great. Yeah. Where's he at, though? That's what I was curious. Where is he located?
He's in Seattle.
Hey,
yeah,
guys,
hey, Carolyn, it's good to talk to you finally.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. You're doing some great stuff out there. Are you just dealing strictly with, you know, what kind of, you know, vegetation are you dealing with? Seriously.
Well, I'm in Seattle now, but I'm trying to get out to New Mexico or Arizona or maybe even the Midwest.
I don't know. You ought to come
like
to Missouri. I'm trying to set up a sanctuary. You ought to help out here, man. I'm telling you. We want to get some stevia. Everybody pronounces it stevia or stevia. And we get some geodesic domes and some hydroponics and something I've never done before, which is aeroponics, but also some vermiponics. I've done the worm stuff before, which is really awesome. And I'm telling you, you ought to come out here. We can, you know, get a heck of a thing going. But now, what have you?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Now, when you say you've been setting this up in Seattle, have you tried anything? Seattle would be a great place for like a mushroom farm. Have you tried any of this kind of stuff or what?
I actually want to get into growing mushrooms, but I'm actually, I'm not really. I live in an apartment, so I'm doing everything I can to get out of here. But I have a community garden plot which
cool.
kind of failed miserably this year, but I have everything's dying now because it's fall, but I had a pretty good garden going
no,
on my balcony.
Come on now, my stuff didn't die till December, January. Come on now, you got to keep it going, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, you just got to keep it warm enough. But now what kind of Sonic was doing it. You know, he was asking me, what kind of stuff were you actually growing? Because you know what, people need to know they can grow it in an apartment, and you can grow it on the roof if everybody in an apartment building. You talk to the owner, and even if just the people together get to, you know, talk about it. And it's like you even have an urban plot that's, you know, hey, my uncle had a place that was like, you know, his front yard was like, you know, 6 foot by 10. You wouldn't believe what you can do. You know, the thing is, when you got a small area, it's got to be a raised area, and you put the stuff in there. You got to get the good nutrients in there. Put your coffee grinds in there. Save your tea bags. You know, empty the tea stuff in there, and you know, really make some serious effort. And I'm telling you, I mean, you can go nuts. It's like I was really impressed with what you were doing. I think you need to be. If you were there, I'd give you a hug. That would, you know, hug the stuff out of you.
Oh, thank you. Virtual hug.
Okay, before this live-in starts, we've just got another caller on the line. So, is that Brett?
Hello?
Brett, is that you?
Hello?
Hello, Brett. You're on the Type 1 Radio Lounge with Caroline, Herb Guy, and Steve.
What's cooking? What's cooking, guys?
Well, we're
talking about
permaculture and an intentional community. Is that right, Herb Guy?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Go ahead and add to that, Brett.
Oh, I'm into all of it.
You missed all of it. Okay. Where have you been? So, Caroline, you're the gal to talk about this stuff. You've pretty much been, this has been up your street for a long time, yeah?
Oh, yeah. That's frankly one of the reasons St. Louis County wants to get me out of my county, because it's like I was living in a subdivision and I got a cool fiberglass thing delivered a couple of years ago, a fiberglass greenhouse. But even before that, and even just out in the, you know, open to the air, and there's really a lot of things you can do. And people don't realize, it's like if you're in an apartment complex, you know, it depends what kind of roof you get. You got a flat roof, there's all kinds of stuff you can do. You got a flat roof, you can put all kinds of plexiglass over things, create your own little dome, create your own little box. And I'm telling you, the biggest thing is that you just got to have the richest stuff, and none of this chemical stuff. Jesus, don't get into garbage. But this is the best time of year. I'm so glad you brought this up, because right now everybody from old China Mart, Walmart, to you know, all the Dollar Generals and, you know, General Dollar, whoever the hell these people are in America, and I don't know what they're called in UK and in UE, and I know people listen to this all over the place. But the thing is, okay, buy all the good, rich, organic stuff that you can. And, like, gosh, right now you can get those $8, $10 bags for, like, $2 or $3. Hey,
yeah,
Walmart, Target, everybody wants to sell these things. And you're going to have to help me out, Sonic. I don't know what the right names are.
Just one sec, Caroline. We've got another caller.
Oh, go for it.
We got caller 61661. You're on the
Namaste.
Tech One Radio Line. Namaste. Is that Swami? Swami?
This is Swami Shiva.
Hey, namaste, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. I'm very excited to hear Miss Woods on the show today.
Good. Yes, she is, sir. She's out. She'll be here hopefully in about 20 minutes.
That's an honor.
Yeah, yeah. And
when I first saw her name show up as being in, you know, involved in the Type 1 thing, I was like, wow, excellent. Somebody got a hold of somebody with a name, you know?
Yeah.
Sure, that will not be the last.
No, hopefully it'll be the start of a few things. It's actually my wife is involved in putting on a talk that she's doing this evening in our town of Brighton in England. And she's very graciously agreed to come on later and do a...
Oh, is that how you did it?
Yeah. Yeah, she's doing a book tour right now in the UK, and she's basically staying with independent people. And, you know, because she's not very well supported, but she needs to be.
No. Yeah, you guys are awesome to be doing this. You know what? Wait, Sonic needs to be credited, and Fychek needs to be credited, and Steve Gaddafi. The guys over there in Brighton for hosting Dr. Wood, who is an incredible human being, who's trying to get truth out. But, you know, everybody in Brighton right now that's helping her needs to really get an e-hug, if nothing else. And, guys, these guys are, you know, they're helping her out because, hey, you know, when you're trying to get the truth out, you know, it's not like winning the lottery. You got to bust your butt, and people got to help out.
Yeah.
All you guys doing that is awesome. And whoever called last week, Siva, please, Siva, I can't find your thing. So anybody else trying to get to Brighton or anywhere else, we're going to help you out. But you got to let us know. Just go directly to Sonic, too. And go on Friend of Freeman's, okay? And I'll put it on my page again. How do you hook up there? But, you know, you guys are just awesome there. And it is, and people don't realize how incredible it is that people are helping Dr. Wood. This is just amazing. You guys should be getting, like, an award for this.
Well, that's enough of an award there, right there, Caroline. Thank you very much. So, Swami, how's your show going? I caught it a couple of weeks ago, the podcast. You still doing it, yeah?
Oh, with Lobo?
No, your own show on Blog Talk.
Oh, yeah. Well, my personal effort is going through a bit of a change at the moment. I'm going to go to a premium membership thing where I can do more than a half an hour at a time. And then I'll be able to schedule it during prime time and such as that. But that's all still, you know, being worked on. What is essential right now at this very moment, no matter where you're standing on the globe, is we're hanging out in the Friendship Agenda chat.
All right.
And we would like more people to come and hang out with us. I'm here, Freeman's here, Lisette's here, Blue Green's here. But a lot of the cool folks are here, and we're just waiting for all the other cool folks to come and hang out with us.
There's one now. They're waiting for Judy Wood. There's a bunch of people in the chat room, I think, maybe.
Yeah, I've got the chat room open now, yeah.
Right.
Well, hey, then, guys,
agenda.com.
Someone's mic is that your mic, Hef guy?
Hey. Making that background noise?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I'm not moving my mouth.
Herb guy's a cool guy. I wish I was close with you, Herb guy. I mean, sincerely.
Thank you. Well, I'm gonna be heading out east someday.
I'm telling you, I want you to think about this Sanctuary, Missouri, man. I'm gonna have you there if you want to be.
I will keep.
I'll put you to work,
updated,
I'll put you to work, man. You got brains and you got smarts about doing this stuff, so I'll put you to work, hon.
All right. I will.
There's an offer for you.
Hey, we gotta make enough food
that
so that when
me,
Steve
yeah.
comes, we gotta have make enough food when that one Steve and Sonic and Saitia come over, you know, they can eat. We gotta make a lot of food.
All right.
I'm
sounds
on
like
a lot
fun.
Of herbs.
Yeah,
Herb guy, have you
me,
actually
herbs.
Got these? You said earlier you had a couple of acres. Have you actually got that in the bag?
No, I haven't met these people. It's kind of a tentative thing. So, you know, I'm not putting all my all my chickens, or I'm not counting my chickens before they hatch yet.
Yeah, yeah. Good advice. But is that
no?
That
I think
your,
you need to sell all that and move to the sanctuary. I'm sorry.
No, he said earlier, Caroline, before you came on, that he had a couple of acres that's a possibility, and I think that's in the Seattle area. Is that correct? Herb
oh,
guy?
Okay.
No, that was in Arizona.
You actually bought
oh,
that?
Sorry, Arizona.
I live in Seattle, but I'm thinking there's going to be a move coming. It's either going to be Arizona, New Mexico, possibly Missouri or Kansas City.
Right. Hey, we got to talk. I'm telling you, Herb, man. I'm telling you. Hey, you don't want to go to New Mexico. Too much underground crap going on there. I mean, Jesus, God, don't adult you. I can show you some. You don't want to go there. I'm telling you, we get a nice central location, we get enough domes put up, doesn't matter what's going on, and I mean, hey, this wasn't called the cave state for nothing. We can do this, and I'm telling you, we can kick butt, and Emily can come there, and Emily will have a nice place to park, get cleaned up. We can have some congresses there that will kick butt.
Well,
I mean,
I'd be happy to work with
you,
Carolyn,
I
appreciate you.
We're in the central part of America, so we can get everybody from Mexico, from Canada. And that way it's not too far from, you know, for Sonic and for Steve and everybody to come from, you know, from the UK.
Yeah. Another thing that I want to do, I mean, that's a great idea. I think it'd be great to, like, get together and start working together, meet each other and help each other out and stuff. I also want to get, like, satellite things going on, too, though. I think the more of these things we can get going, the better. That's why I like the idea of the land gift thing. I've also, you guys also, at least the people I'm speaking to, I know you saw the Friends of Freeman thing for the fundraiser powwow thing for the intentional community. We didn't really have much of a turnout for that. Brett came on and we typed at him because he didn't have a microphone at the time, and Jay was on, and Jay had some cool. Jay was talking about free energy and stuff as usual, and he's always got all kinds of cool stuff to say, and he's got like a device I'm going to try out and experiment and see if I can get like that to do anything cool, and maybe that'll be a way to like generate some revenue towards this sort of thing. But I want to get people together that have some sort of. Because I see the fundraising thing happening. I just don't know how because I don't know anything about that arena. So if anybody listening has any know-how in that department, we could use you. And if anybody that likes that is into this idea thinks it's a good cause, wants to get together and like because I don't want it to be all about – I want to take the focus off of me and put it on everybody. If
spread,
we could
spread
start,
it collectively,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, if we could start like some sort of like organization or something, I don't know. But I want to get I want people to start getting together and get organized. And so, all I really have to contribute at this point is like some ideas and some skills. But you know, if we all start getting on the same page, then stuff will start happening. You know.
Yeah, we're getting there, man. I mean, the first steps is the baby steps. We're all sort of getting the ideas, and we know
Hello.
That we're going to pull up. We've just been joined by Sonic.
Hello.
And Howard. And Muzz, sorry.
And Judy and
Fajic
and Azov and Holloman and Vicky will be meeting here
so
shortly.
There'll be quite a crowd any minute, so you better speak now, Caroline.
No, I'm just, trust me, this was an honor to even just listen on the phone. No, I'm sorry, Dr. Wood, I'm not going to call her that, you know, otherwise. And she's an honorable person. I mean, I've read her stuff, and she's an, a great, incredible person. And, you know, hey, you guys are just awesome anyway, Steve, and Sonic and Sidechick, for God's sakes. You know, you guys are just awesome over there. So it's like, you know, I'm just honored to even be on the phone. So, hey, I'll just sit here and listen, and I'll chime in whenever you need me. Seriously, I can ask any technical questions you want, because I've actually worked on some of the weapons she's talking about. And I'll add whenever you guys need me to, because I'm just honored to be here with the incredible people. And anytime anybody is on the Type 1 radio, you're lucky, seriously, because this is an awesome group of people. Seriously.
I'd just like to say that I've just got back from the talk there, and it was quite an amazing
presentation.
Yes.
Good.
She has got some fascinating information. I only really found I listened to Judy maybe like 3 or 4 months ago. I think it was a Red Ice creation.
Yeah,
thing.
She's not widely known, but she's known
And the first time listening to it, it sort of really went over my head. I didn't quite understand what she was saying. And then John Lash was on Freighter, Freighter show maybe a month ago, and then he was sort of explained it, and then I went back to listen to the
Red
Ice again, and it sort of made a lot more sense. And just hearing it live from the horse's mouth.
Caroline, we've filmed it, so it'll be posted up somewhere soon for you to see the talk that she gave tonight.
Oh, awesome. I mean, I'll put it out on the internet. I will do everything I can to make it viral, because, you know, I was the original producer on Veritas, and I know that Mel Fabregas has interviewed her there, and I love Henrik on
Red Ice.
You know, I put Red Ice on my page all the time, both at Friend of Freeman, which is the place to go for social stuff, and I put everything else on my Facebook, too. And, I mean, I Red Ice is great, and they put her on there, and she's done an incredible job, and, you know, she's trying to get the information out there, and she's one of the few brave people that has actually gone to the United States Supreme Court to try to deal with this, when everybody else just keeps saying, hey, we ought to do something. We don't know what to have to do. You know, hey, man,
so
we ought to fucking.
You still there, Shrummy?
She actually did it, you know, and the thing is, she deserves the credit, you know what I mean? And people want to sit there and say, okay,
you'll have an opportunity to tell her in a minute.
Yeah.
Are you still there, Shrummy?
Oh, God. Thank God I'm not there in person. I'd hurt her.
Shrummy?
I'm just waiting for Carolyn to stop talking.
I shut up.
So
I know, I told these guys.
Hang on, Carolyn. Hang on, Carolyn. Shrummy, where did you first hear about Judy Wood then?
I'm sorry?
Where did you first hear about Judy Wood?
Where did I first hear about it? You know, I don't actually know.
All right. Okay.
She was on a show of some sort, and I got to reading about, you know, this incredibly, you know, crazy, if you look at it from the mainstream news sort of thing. They're not going to talk about those sorts of weapons and things. And just that anyone with any knowledge of that sort of stuff would come out and start getting attention is just a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I was just like, even if she's not correct, she knows and has access to knowledge more people need to have.
Yeah.
So
well, that's
her
whole point of her teachings, that she presents the facts. She doesn't really sort of...
She didn't give an explanation at all, really. She presented the information that happened on the day, you know, how the towers disintegrated right in front of everybody's eyes, and then she sort of explained the relationship with the Hutchinson
effect,
and that was as far as it went. She didn't say, well, this did it.
Yeah, she doesn't blame anything. She just presents
these people did it. She just says, this something happened here that we don't know. So in order to get an understanding of who could have done it and why they did it, we need to understand what happened, basically.
Yeah. Well, as far as
well,
I understand, it's free.
If all that her input does is expose more people to the fact that weapons they never dreamed of exist and have perhaps been turned on their relatives, that's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that opens these doors to what was hidden,
mm-hmm.
anything that opens the doors to that allows the light to get in. And that's all we have to do is keep looking at these people and what they do and what they've been doing and keep pointing at them.
Absolutely.
We don't have to attack them.
That's exactly right, sir.
They will kill themselves. They will turn on one another
and they are doing already, Swami, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you listen to, I don't know if y'all listen to Ben Fulford's stuff, but
if he's
telling the truth, we're not far away from a big reset.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not far away. And it's going to put Alex Jones out of business.
Well, that would be terrible, wouldn't it?
Such a shame.
I learned a lot through Alex Jones.
I discovered framing through Alex Jones, I don't like the guy, I must admit.
Well, he's not. I'm indifferent to him.
Yeah, he's just a fearmonger, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of their agenda. You know, they thrive on fear, so Alex is just...
I don't know. See, I was listening to Alex just, what was it, Friday, I guess. And I felt him, you know? I don't believe that he is pushing an agenda. I think he really feels like he says.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to look at someone who's come to some sort of name recognition and try to take them out because they're a big target, you know?
I agree with you. I remember you saying before that you have to look at the light and the dark.
Oh, absolutely. You cannot look at one and think the other does not exist.
Absolutely.
Or has no input. You've got to look at the whole thing, everything that's going on, because you are everything that's going on.
Yeah, that's the nature of duality, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. I mean, we're in a dualistic reality, but we are not limited to that.
Uh-huh.
You know? And when it gets to the religious stuff... You know, religions are all based on people who had mystic experiences.
Yeah.
Well, everyone can have mystic experiences. It's just that what came along after them didn't teach how to have these experiences for yourself. They started worshiping the one who had the experience, when the one who had the experience didn't want to be worshipped. They said, come here. Let me talk to you. I'll tell you what I'll show you. And that's that. That's the objective. Any realized being will only help you in whatever way is most appropriate for you.
Yep.
You know? And it's a real simple thing. But those who, you know, brought up the whole Buddhist thing and the Christian thing and all these egocentric religious systems, they miss the whole point.
Yeah.
They just miss the whole point of what the teachers had to say.
Yeah. Swami, the whole of Brighton has just walked into my kitchen.
We're Judy!
And we've got the eminent Judy Wood with us. So I think we'll just play a little song and then we'll bring her on. Does that sound good?
Yes.
Okay, so. That was Judy as a punk, which in Britain means it's a good thing because you're a free thinker if you're a punk rocker over here.
Yeah.
Is that right, Sonic?
That's right. I was a little bit young for the punk scene, so I was only 4 when punk started.
Uh-huh. Only 4? I was a bit older than that myself. How old were you, Swami, when punk rock hit?
Punk didn't make a big impact in Southeast Oklahoma, where I.
the Flaming Lips, then, yeah?
The what?
The Flaming Lips, do you know them?
Yeah. Flaming Lips, I've heard of, yes.
Yeah, well, they're from Oklahoma.
No, I never did get into the punk thing. I was much more of a heavy metal guy.
Okay, fair enough.
Much
well,
more
the punk scene in Britain was more to do with free thinking than it was music. Well, as much to do with free thinking as it was to do with music. But anyway, as you can hear, everybody's sort of in the kitchen sort of thing. But do you want to continue on with what you were saying, Swami? Because it was very enlightening. If you
can
remember that.
I know where I was going. here's the point of everything from this Swami's point of view and experience. We, the individuated units of consciousness strolling about on the planet, each of us has the potential to go within our own selves and find the truth. It will reveal itself to you. You do not have to. It's not a hard thing to do. And considering the vibrational frequency shifting that's going on right now, the very vibrational rate of matter is increasing. So the old limitations do not apply anymore. Those who, you know, maybe back in the 70s or whatever, thought about getting into meditation and trying to be enlightened like the gurus and all that sort of thing. This has become very easy now. It really, really is. And it's not like when enlightenment occurs, you don't gain anything. What happens is you directly and consciously recognize what has always already been the case. The pure light of consciousness, that you will perceive this within yourself. This is what every master of every tradition has talked about. Jesus said, if thine eye be single, thy body will be full of light. That's a very real and directly perceivable phenomenon that is shared by people who follow the mystic path. And the mystic only means that you are having a direct inner experience connecting to the greater reality.
Wow. Is Andrew there?
I'm here. I've just got to fiddle with my sound.
Okay.
You're coming through.
You're coming through loud and clear. Okay, carry on, Swami. Sorry, that was just a sound check. Swami?
Yes.
Yep. Continue, sir.
Okay. Okay. Once upon a time, it took people a lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of work and study and practice and meditation to reach the ultimate state that is called Jivanmukta, which is free while embodied. You become both 100% fully, limitlessly divine while functioning in an individualized body. And when you reach this point, it's really, and it's not a big deal, and it's not like only a few people have ever done this. Many people have done it. And it's just not well understood, and it's not talked about very much, but it is absolutely the end result for every human. That's how it works. And it doesn't matter if the human is from the planet Earth or any of the other 400,000 worlds that are spoken of as occupied by humans in the Vedas. All this stuff has been known for a very long time. And it's been being passed down from teacher to student always. And it will continue to be that way. But the powers that be, or the powers that were, or, you know, whatever you'd like to call these folks, and their off-world
what entities
and all that. When they came to this planet, we had a great party for them. and they crapped in our pool. And now we got to kick them out. Sorry.
Yeah.
So we can get back to doing what humans are supposed to do, which is what Freeman is out there doing now with the Friendship Agenda and Miss Emily on the road.
We can all
do this. It is our nature to do this unless our thinking has been tinkered with by someone else to move it in a different direction and to make us think only of how much you have to lose or how much you can be hurt. When we function seeing only the best in everything, the best happens, even when you're scared crapless. These things happen. Talk to Freeman about sitting along the side of the road in PA with Miss Emily.
Yeah.
No, I can only imagine what that was like.
Mm-hmm.
But then, the universe, the awesome, wish-fulfilling machine that it is, sent help. And what did he gain? More new parts on Miss Emily? I mean, look, it was just sitting there going, we got you covered, man. Don't sweat it. It's going to look scary for a minute, but we got you. Don't sweat it. Because when you're doing the right thing, those forces in the universe will line up right behind you. The masters stand shoulder to shoulder with you every day when you choose to operate as an awakened human being, even if you're not fully awake. You don't have to be completely enlightened to be smart, to be a human. Just do that. That's enough. Because just doing that will pull you further and further into what it really means to be human and to express amongst other humans. That you know to be the right thing.
Jason says he can't get through on his phone.
Jay?
Yeah.
You can't get through?
Jay.
Well, Jay, if you're listening, try again. Sorry, Swami, we're just having a... We just try to get as many people on as we can.
Yeah, and if anybody else wants to ring in, there is obviously the number, phone number,
7506.
Yeah, and if you go to the Dark One Radio page there on the blog talk, the Skype button should work.
It should work, yeah.
Yeah.
It's working for Swami, so come
yeah.
on.
Yeah. And also, who's at the bottom?
That's Brett, but he's making too much noise.
Okay. Was he eating?
Brett, what were you making noise with? Brett. He's gone.
So Jay, just try and ring... don't try and ring my Skype, because... that won't work. Try and ring the show Skype. Oh, yeah. We're going to try and conference you in, actually, Jay. Get them all in there.
Yeah.
Conference them all in.
So that was nice words of wisdom there again from Swami. Thank you very much.
Yeah, what were you up to say, Swami?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello,
Jay. Free Energy Hello. Jay, you're on the Type 1 Radio Lounge. How are you, Jay?
Pretty good. I couldn't figure out how to get on there. I keep hitting that click thing, and it, nothing works.
Yeah, you have to, there's about three stages. You have to click that, then click something else, then click something else, and you're in.
And I've just got a Skype message from the man Freeman saying, go to thefriendshipagenda.com. And you can listen in the chat there, and everybody's in there, apparently. Yeah, Freeman.
Hi, Freeman.
Call in.
Give us a call, Freeman.
Yeah.
You're on there, Jay. One moment of silence, and that's what we get to hear.
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody just fart?
No, that would be rude. Come on.
Should we let Judy say hello?
Should we introduce our special guest? We've just been attending
very interesting
amazing talk in Brighton that has just blown so many people away, and people were very receptive. And it was a talk by Judy Wood, who just happens to be here. I managed to persuade her to come back to be on the Type 1 radio show. And so what kind of reception have you had around the rest of the country, Judy?
Rather amazing. No Rotten Tomatoes.
The
US seems to.
You were saying that in Great Britain, people have been a lot more receptive to your, a lot more open-minded and receptive to your work than in the US.
Oh yes, and
there's that kind of flashcard culture in America.
Right, it's like, you know, memorize, regurgitate, get in lockstep. And I've been thinking about that. What is the difference? It's a pretty amazing difference. Yeah, my squeaky chair here.
Yeah, apologies for the squeaky chair.
It's all sound effects.
Okay, and it really is a culture. And there's a couple of different things about it, and one of them is. You know, how I was thinking of this English friend of ours that came to visit us when I was in junior high, and he went to junior high with me, wearing his uniform. And the U.S. junior high kids, that, you know, made fun of him, snickered at him. He just grinned like, you know what their problem was. And I think there's a really big difference. There's more independent thought and inner security here that people can listen and take things in. Who they are isn't dependent on going with the crowd. And there's more independent thought. And that's, I think, what becomes quite important.
Yeah. You were talking last night on the Isle of Wight.
Mm-hmm.
How did that go?
Amazing turnout there. A lot of people. And they all were very appreciative of it.
I heard David Icke's son was there, gave you a book.
Oh, Gareth.
Sure,
was it autographed?
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
some plain reading. Oh, yeah. I've not actually read your book yet, but looking through it.
And
comparing that to David Icke's book, just what I've seen so far, as I've gone, whoa.
Yeah, I think that anybody hasn't heard of your work, or even if people have heard of your work, and then they go to your book, and I mean, I've seen a lot of I've seen talks that you've done in the past, New Hiroshima talks and things like this, and kind of thought she's onto something here, but didn't quite understand it, couldn't really explain what the gist of it was, but I knew there was something going on there, and have kind of, tried to kind of follow along with your work and that, and the book has got so much more information in it, and it's incredibly concise. And one of the things that kind of really knocked me sideways was this idea of the microwave energy technology, which you're describing in there's a transcript of a woman speaking over the telephone to a 911 telephonist. And obviously the telephonist is trying to keep her lucid, because if she's in a building where there's a lot of smoke, she's going to be losing consciousness, and so they're trying to keep them lucid. But this woman is not losing consciousness. She is in a mad panic, yet she is saying there is smoke around and there is heat. But obviously it's not smoke as we know smoke, because she's not losing consciousness in any way. And then I looked into things, I saw a video on Andrew Johnson's site about the active denial system, and another video about called Star Wars in Iraq, which I've actually put up on the Friends of Freeman site, because it's a very interesting look at doctors in Iraq talking about patients who have come in with a new type of injury, which they can't work out how it's been sustained. It's not bullet wounds or anything, but there's a new type of injury that they can't explain. It's nothing they've ever seen. So it's a new type of weaponry. They're concluding themselves. They don't know who you are or anything, but they're concluding there's a new type of weaponry around, which is inflicting a new type of injury. So... We need to know about this, really, don't we? power to inflict a new type of injury upon us.
Can we recognize it?
Can we recognize when it's being used, or will we just call it a burn or a,
Go ahead, Jay.
Well, I figured if they're using a microwave scalar weapon, they were using two satellites throwing a scalar wave, then they were using one satellite to fire off a maser right at the building itself, and the maser's what set off the scalar waves when the maser hit the building.
And how do you conclude that? What evidence supports that?
Well, I've experimented with producing scalar waves and torsion waves.
But how does it? What does that have to do with it? What happened to the building?
The building billowed up heat from it. The scalar waves open a corridor, and that energy is infinite. You can put the entire universe in a pinpoint size of the head of the needle.
What happens
is you have something that goes into phase conjunction, and what happens is that it allows energy into this universe. And, it, you know, it's just like igniting the sun or something. It's nothing but pure energy.
Hang on, Judy. Let Judy make a point.
What I'm wondering about is you're saying this is what was used, and I'm wondering what evidence you have that it was that's what was used on the building,
or is it just an idea?
No, it had to be scalar on a microwave basis because the other would be too long. Now, the scalar wave generators were probably just regular microwave generators that used to make a scalar field. How they did it was by using magnetic coils, and they ran one magnetic field against the other.
Okay, but what evidence at the World Trade Center supports that?
Well, the disintegration of the calcium in the cement is the biggest thing, and besides the pool of metal that was underneath.
Ah, but was there a pool of metal?
Yeah, I'm looking for the evidence that supports what you're getting at. You're talking about that the buildings were cooked, were heated up?
Any kind of calcium, just turned to powder. Even your bones, they probably didn't find very many people with bone mass or anything.
Now, see, I like to talk about evidence, and I'm lost without being able to talk about that. I'm familiar with the evidence of what happened at the World Trade Center. So I'm wondering, you have this idea, and I'm trying to connect the two.
Now, in Iraq, they just were using microwave. Microwave will do that disorientation. Just plain microwaves that are transmitted. They weren't scalar weapons.
Okay. Like the active denial system, is that the kind of thing?
Well, they started out experimenting with microwaves, even on insects. They found that insects when they were hit with high frequency microwaves, they would change direction for one thing. But what it slowly builds up heat in the body, especially the brain, and it causes disorientation first before it causes any kind of death or anything like that. It's very, very wicked. Basically, roasts from the inside out. In fact, you can't get near regular microwave towers.
Or even
high frequency towers without getting burnt by the radiation. The body is very vulnerable that way.
Judy was making some interesting observations in America about how when they switched their television signals to what's it called?
The new digital television.
Digital television, which is just going on in this country. It isn't all over at the moment, but it's just going on. There seemed to be a greater combination of tornadic activity going on in America, and that in the fields that are being created by this different energy which is coming out from the
normally in the Midwest it's Tornado Alley. Spring, the Midwest has tornadoes, but beginning in 2008, they became super duper tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
And 2008, coincidentally, was when the nation started gearing up for this big switchover to digital television, perhaps new radio transmission towers were put in.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see what's going to happen in this country, or perhaps in Europe as well.
Yeah, yeah. So the switch over is just about complete over
right.
here.
Okay, so
it's next March, I think.
Next March, Each area is getting there.
Right.
And we've certainly seen some
different weather changes.
Absolutely,
The Hutchison effect is created by interfering radio frequency signals within a static field. Normal weather systems have a static field
around them.
And you get
well,
thunderstorms with a tornado.
Shower is a static field as well, isn't it?
And then if you interfere radio frequency signals and suddenly, you know, there's more installed, more put into use,
it would be interesting.
So if you see a bunch of, it's just a, you know, conservative.
We get a day after tomorrow scenario. Was it that film where all the tornadoes and things started popping up? Was it that film?
Yeah.
And that's why, because everybody wants to watch the X Factor or something.
In high definition.
In high definition.
You want to see everybody's pimples.
So it was a very, very interesting talk, and Judy's book I would highly recommend people to look at Judy's book, because
which is Where Did the Towers Go?
It's called Where Did the Towers Go, and there's just so much information in there. Also talking about the metal thing, about saying about molten metal, but things that you your quote? Things that look hot.
Hot things glow, but not everything that glows is hot.
It's hot, right? And just there are certain temperatures at which metal becomes molten, and if metal becomes molten at that temperature, it has to be at a particularly extreme temperature. So where there is footage of what looks like molten material appearing from a section of one of the Twin Towers, this may appear to be molten material, but if it is as hot as real molten material, it would have been having an extreme burning effect going on all around it. There would have been smoke and fire and flames and a real inferno happening around it. But it's just very calmly pouring out in a beautiful cascade of sparks.
And to be glowing like that, that, you know, orange, yellow, that's, you know, like 1,100, 1,200 degrees centigrade.
That's just before white hot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
slightly before white
hot. Right, yeah. And but if it's molten iron, then it's going to be it's going to be like 1,550 degrees centigrade at least. Now, aluminum melts at 660 degrees centigrade. So if you have this 1,600 degree liquid pouring out over the aluminum cladding on the outside of the building,
it's going to melt the aluminum.
Right, and that's not melted.
No, nothing, it doesn't even steam.
Aluminium. Oh, English
people. Okay. Excuse me.
Now, you're talking to America, so aluminum's fine. Yeah.
Let's pull the whole thing off.
But we're in good old England, so we'll use the English terms. How it was said in the first place.
But there are just so many amazing
these orange Cheetos on pieces of paper, and the paper isn't burning.
Exactly, yeah. Something glowing to almost white hot, yet the paper around it isn't
on fire. What's the relationship with that? The hurricane? Are you suggesting that whatever happened or whatever, like...
energy they created?
Yeah. Pushed off the hurricane, or you saying
that... I don't have any conclusions about exactly what the hurricane was used for. You have to ask the people who organized, you know, what happened on 9/11.
Yeah.
But
I'd like to do that.
I'd love to do that,
If
you're out there,
you ring. Yeah. If you did 9/11, please ring in.
But in looking at all the evidence, you can't eliminate any of it. You have to look at all the evidence. And that hurricane is part of the evidence.
Right, and the fact that they didn't mention it makes it a big
or underplayed it.
Thing. Or underplayed it, It was mentioned in some very small way. But
well,
I'd
never heard of it until...
I'd never heard of it.
How about when Geraldo Rivera said, just 1 year ago, Geraldo Rivera said, well, you know, it's really too bad that, you know, too bad we didn't have a hurricane on 9/11.
I know, that was amazing. I heard this clip tonight. Judy played this clip of this guy saying, if only there'd been a hurricane on 9/11.
Is that him actually not knowing? Or?
He still doesn't know. I mean, as far as we know. This was a year ago.
Have you like contacted him? Has he? Surely he's got like satellite footage. Was he working? He's been in the.
He's been chasing them for about 4 years.
Here's another piece of evidence. I should play the clip. It's from a radio show in the U.S. The Power Hour, Joyce Riley. T- he had some guy call in who said, "You're a liar for saying there's a hurricane on 9/11. I know there wasn't a hurricane on 9/11. And Joyce Riley is saying, "This is really hurting your credibility because we can't verify whether or not there really was a hurricane on 9/11. You know, it looks like there wasn't a hurricane. Just look at the National Hurricane Center."
That's the
whole website. Yeah. And, but the fact that, you know, somebody's trying to discredit me for saying that there's a hurricane there when you can check,
yeah,
implies that they didn't know.
Yeah.
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 And some people did. Some, like Fox News, actually did report hurricane areas. But it was like, don't worry about this. It's heading out. But then it was moving further in, and they were like, oh, don't worry. It's going to move out in a minute. But it came so close, closer than...
It was raining on Cape Cod.
Yeah, raining. So that's pretty close. And see all the fuss that went on about Irene just recently.
Yeah.
So
how...
And Hurricane Erin was bigger.
What's the difference? What's the distance from New York to Cape Cod for all of that?
New York, you know, is Long Island that sticks out there.
Yeah.
The tip of Long Island was, like, right under the Outer Bands as well. But maybe it's, I don't know, like, the 200 miles or...
Okay, so...
I don't know,
it's a fair distance, yeah.
Yeah. Well, towards that is, to America.
Maybe it's that, I don't think it's that distance. It's...
Well, 200 miles with a huge hurricane, that's... Not that far, is it?
No, no.
What was our friend saying to us the other day? Hurricanes, the guy who watches hurricanes for a living, and they're all changing direction now.
Oh, no, they're all following the line of that magnetic thing.
Well,
this one
is. Hurricane Erin was magnetic.
Right.
Where all of the other ones tend to like whoosh up the parallel to the coast.
Right. Well, we were speaking to a friend who works for FEMA. And he watches hurricanes for a living, sort of thing, you know. And
he's contracted to FEMA. He doesn't work for them.
Yeah, he's contracted them. But his job is to go to disaster areas and try and help, sort of thing. And he's saying that all the hurricanes lately have been changing direction and probably magnetic north, like you said.
Really?
Yeah. That's his job. He's sort of
to kind of pick up on what you were saying, Nick, about what's the relevance of the hurricane. Yeah. I've often seen Judy's talks and been rather intrigued by the evidence of the field effects and that, and thought, that's interesting, but not really being able to kind of see how that is kind of linked in with things.
Because I won't state that.
Yeah,
I know this is used for that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that.
She doesn't like to kind of lay it out for you so that, or just tell you, like, right, this is this and this is that,
she's just going to give you evidence
and you work it out yourself, but I'm not very good at stuff like
that.
Well,
you're an academic, you're dealing with facts.
I've been lucky enough to be able to talk with Judy and help her. She's helped me work it out, if you like. And she was saying that the we were talking about a Van de Graaff generator and how that creates a static field.
Yeah, yeah.
And makes your hair stand on end.
Yeah, yeah. I've done it at school.
John Hutchison uses a static field along with other converging fields to make his the effects that he recreates. And Judy was saying that a hurricane creates these static field effects. And so perhaps in some way, the static field that was being created by the hurricane was being used in some way.
We do know that the static field was close enough because we have a record of thunder at JFK Airport, LaGuardia Airport, and Newark Airport, the three major airports.
New York, yeah.
You know, thunder there means, you know, you got a...
field effect.
Yeah.
And is it possible to harness that?
The levitation reports as well of people actually at
the
site.
Yeah.
So there were actually field effects occurring at the actual
The picture of the car that's sort of over the fence that's underneath the lip of the house. Yeah, that baffles me.
Didn't tumble there.
No,
yeah.
How did it must have slipped in.
Levitated.
Yeah.
But let me clarify something that often folks so often get misled on. That that they think that, you know, they harness the energy, or, you know, you plug the extension cord into the hurricane to power some gizmo somewhere,
mm-hmm.
not realizing the static field is part of the, you know, this. Okay, here's an example. How much energy does it take to move a glass across the counter? Depends on the mechanism.
Depends on, yeah.
If you push it across a dry countertop, it takes a certain amount of energy. If you put water on the countertop and hydroplane across, it takes almost no energy.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
The amount of energy it takes to move it is dependent on the mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that water isn't providing energy to scoot it across. Like, is it like, it takes a certain amount of energy to push it across when it's dry.
Yeah, it's taking,
okay.
away, it's taking away the resistance.
Right, but it isn't like where extension cord is plugged in, providing energy to push it across the dry countertop.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
It's a different mechanism.
Right.
And that mechanism doesn't require, you know, the same amount of energy. Think of the static field that way. Rather than harnessing energy to do X, Y, and Z,
right, yeah, yeah.
Think of it as the water that allows the cup to hydroplane. It just provides this environment that allows this other, you know, interaction to take place.
Oh, okay.
Ah, right.
Wow.
High electrostatic fields will cause torsion fields to appear, too.
It will cause torsion of fields. Torsion fields.
So you make
electric static will cause torsion.
Oh, well. And when you have torsion fields, you can have all kinds of anomalous properties, like boards going through trees, time distortion,
yeah.
levitation,
yeah,
all kinds of things.
Right, that's the issue of hurricanes. And I believe that the hurricanes are a natural occurring interferometry, so to speak, of like what the Hutchinson effect is, which is a static field in which he interferes radio frequency signals. So if we have static fields normally in nature, and then we have extra, you know, doses of radio frequency signals flying all over the planet, and they keep increasing, we're fixing the mess up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Oh, wow.
So now you see what my concern is about in the Midwest. We've suddenly, beginning in 2008,
last year was the biggest one of all time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's another cool thing that that to observe is the Joplin tornado.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of folks, I think it was either 17 or 19 folks in this convenience store when the tornado came. They ran to the back and got in the cooler, big walking cooler. And it didn't lose its size. It was a, you know, huge cooler, and it
mm-hmm.
closed the door and all. You could hear things around it, but you didn't hear, you know, the side get ripped off and big whooshing air blow through. It was a closed box, and this guy had this video camera going. It was pretty dark. You saw some lights, you know, flash by as the thing was twirling around. But what was kind of amazing, okay, you can hear, they thought they were meeting their end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One guy says, I love you all. And then it's all quiets down, and the storm's kind of gone. And they say, who's under me? Oh, is that you on top of me? They're all...
The
voles.
Whoa. What, they've all levitated and
yeah,
dropped and stuff
up.
Out?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Who's
oh
under me? Is that you under me? Is that you on top of me?
Yeah.
It's like a
fall. Yeah.
Wow.
How is that?
And that's
that, kind of, they're so worried for their lives at that time. They and in a dark, enclosed space.
But if it was in, you know, they're just in this cooler, don't they huddle together or stand together?
Yeah,
yeah.
Why
yeah.
are they stacked up?
Yeah, yeah.
Unless they were floating around
yeah.
haphazardly.
Yeah, you'd
oh
all stand
God,
in the corner
yeah.
and hold hands or something or hug.
Yeah.
But if you're on top of each other,
or huddle,
why don't you try and climb
on
top of each other? It doesn't make sense.
And when you think that cooler is all metal coated, so it's probably.
Yeah, it's wrapped in aluminum, isn't it? Yeah.
It acts like a Faraday cage, so all that could get in there would be torsion energy.
Ooh, interesting.
Is that like Farrell's donut thing again?
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that in tornadoes also, you have anti-gravity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because people have been lifted up. They can breathe just fine inside the feather cloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a thing tonight you were saying about someone lifted up and just placed
someone
down.
Read my book.
Oh, in the football field guy.
Yeah, he read my book and then, you know, contacted me and said, oh, yeah, they're practicing football, and the coach called him off the field, but he wasn't close enough. He didn't get out in time. The trainer picked him up. And he said that the proprioception was very precise, and movement was extremely easy. Proprioception meaning you close your eyes and you can touch your finger to your nose because you know where your hand is.
Yeah.
Knowing where all...
So you're not spun out and disorientated.
Not at all disoriented. And like probably weightlessness. And it was very easy to move around, and he knew where all of his...
There's a new sort of fairground ride or an attraction now where you can go and they spin you in anti-gravity. That sounds similar to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Hey, you're talking about it.
The house is picked up by the tornado and then put down very carefully, isn't it? It doesn't smash to the ground, does it?
That wasn't telling
me. It crashes the witch.
Yeah, was that for real?
but in the scary...
It was in black and white.
Player guy who's so you can breathe just fine. And many people say that if you're in the middle of it now, if you get, you know, the edge of it may get torn up.
Did he, was he, he was obviously sat down by the tornado.
Gently put it back down.
Right.
It was fine.
When was that?
In the middle of it before the active outside though? Or did it create itself?
It formed on him.
It was within the area where he was.
There's quite a few of them that people who've had that.
Was it little kids who were playing football in that thing? Because I've seen a video of some little kids somewhere playing a football match and a tornado suddenly...
It's probably a different one.
Yeah.
But there's quite a few examples of this. There's also this story of some antique coins that got picked up, and they don't ride in the funnel. They ride in the clouds up above, and then they, like 2.5 or 3 miles downstream, they just got sent back down.
Yeah.
One place. There's some weird things like that. A lot of weird stuff with these field effects that, when stuff doesn't get destroyed or does get destroyed.
Yeah.
But we look at some areas that have been devastated by the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Joplin, the trees don't have bark on them.
Right,
yeah.
That's the weird thing.
I've heard stories years ago about piles of frogs and piles of fish just sort of dropping on. Would that be the same?
Probably. It's different types of things getting picked up and dropped.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously a weird kind of energy field and a different kind of thing than we've been taught that it is.
And someone knows how to harness what we would call weird effects, but to them they call useful effects, and they're using them in a very useful way to them, but perhaps not useful to us at the moment if it's being used in
certainly not in weapon form anyway, for sure.
And that isn't to say that we have to have tornadoes to create this effect, because
God knows us and then have tornadoes.
And there's static electricity around us all the time, isn't there?
In the ether.
Yeah, thunderstorms or anything. It's naturally.
Organite,
it's naturally there. Yeah. So, somebody knows how to use some very interesting natural.
And her name is
Sophia. Yeah.
Well, it was patented over 100 years ago.
That's right, 100 years ago, almost to the day, wasn't it? The 24th of October.
Yeah.
This was patented by
George Pigott.
And
Judy was in the very spot on the very day 100 years ago?
I was at Blackpool back, and I added the slide in, but when it was 1903 when he applied for the patent, but it was October 24th, 1911.
That was in
2011.
Right.
And it was just 100 years to the day that patent was granted. That is this levitation. He had a static field.
So somebody
a very static field and then put some other energy source into it and he has his levitating ball.
So 100 years ago, somebody knew how to do.
Somebody levitated the ball 100 years ago.
Yeah, it took
electrical energy.
It took about 250 kilovolts to cause an object to levitate, you know, those balls. But he did a later experiment where he found that even alternating current of high voltage will do the same thing.
Ooh.
Was that before or after Tesla?
During.
There were people at that time who were experimenting with
then
this
it was
kind
above
of thing.
The table.
It
was in the back room.
Well, the rest of the world were living with gas lights in their homes. Mm-hmm.
And then J.P. Morgan.
J.P. Morgan came in and went,
And look where we are now.
They suppressed it all, didn't they? They didn't allow that technology.
Yeah, in fact, what he was using was a Windhurst machine on the original experiment. But he had it encased and pressurized with, I believe, carbon dioxide so he could get a stronger electron field from the Windhurst. Usually you can only get about a K and 150 K off of Windhurst, but he got over 250 K. And metal balls about 3 to 4 inches. In size, he had them levitating around the room.
Is that the guy? What was his name again?
George Piggott.
Is that George Piggott? You're saying, right?
Yeah, right. I got books on electrostatics. Guy named Ford wrote a good book on it, and he actually shows how to build some of the units they use.
Just a sec, we want to.
Are you bringing somebody in?
3110?
Or 310?
Or 310, rather.
You're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello, Philip.
Hi, guys. I'm just driving in LA traffic. Just thought I'd drop in and say hi. Yeah, I got a wonderful show today. I just wanted to say my appreciation. You guys are kicking ass.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Glad
you enjoyed. We'll let Judy talk on. Phil. See you later, yeah? Listen on.
Yeah, I'm just going to hang.
Hold on.
Yeah. Say that again, Phil. Sorry.
I'm breaking up. Sorry. Yeah, I'm just calling to listen in, you guys. So go ahead.
Okay. Bye.
It's not energy being worth it, is it?
So what happened 100 years ago? Mm-hmm. So
he patented it.
It was accepted.
Yeah. So it's nothing new that we're talking about.
Except the only thing new is that they don't allow patents like that anymore.
No. No, I know. Yeah.
I'm
gonna
teach it.
So.
But there's something that, you know, really kind of gets to me is that according to our history books, according to Wikipedia, according to anything in our recorded history, the static electricity was supposedly discovered in 600 BC. Yet electricity took another 2,400 years.
Hey.
To discover, was there no lightning between those two?
Yeah, I guess not.
When
yeah.
was that? BC.
Yeah.
Before Christ.
Static
electricity.
That's right. So they discovered static electricity.
And there wasn't
BC.
Even.
Yeah.
And there wasn't even any nylon around in those days either, was there?
And then, well, yeah.
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 So they weren't running balloons on them. They had standing on them. What the hell were they doing?
Waterfalls or something?
I don't remember what the source is for that. But then there's batteries. Also, John Hutchison reproduced the Ark of the Covenant. You know,
oh,
this is like
God.
Capacitors. That
yeah.
was way before they supposedly discovered electricity.
Yeah.
Things don't make sense. It's
no,
like they
no,
discover
absolutely,
stuff,
yeah.
discover it.
Yeah. So is George Pigott's discovery going to be undiscovered? I'm sure there'll be other things. Someone's going to suddenly put it and say, oh, I've discovered levitation. I mean, we know that John Hutchison has recreated that and that George Pigott.
But he's a lunatic. He's been marginalized. You know, Ace Baker says that he's all fake. It's how they control
some very sensible scientists who wears very sensible clothes and is very media savvy will come up
and has got a good government grant to tell you not.
who's just been given a lovely government grant. Yeah, will come forward and say,
we need more dollars and we might be getting there.
Yeah, we need another 20 years and we'll be there.
Yeah, we need another 20 years to work out how to...
Discovering things, what Andrew Johnson talks about... Discovering water on Mars or whatever. We had a recent discovery.
This is something Freeman has talked about as well. Then spend billions of dollars, trillions. To go to the moon to say, oh, we've got, we're looking for water there, or oh, we're looking for water on Mars. There's no viable reason for it.
Maybe Andrew has the history behind all the different...
Andrew, are you there?
Andrew, call in.
No, he's there.
He's here, look.
Oh, he's here. Oh, right.
Can we...
Can you speak to us, Andrew?
I'm here.
Hey!
Yeah, the history on all this rediscovering water someplace.
Recently, they discovered it again.
Yes, tell us about discovering water on Mars and the rediscovery.
Which time? You've checked the subject. My sound temporarily dropped out. You were talking about somebody levitating their balls.
Let your balls levitate and drop some wisdom on us about the water on Mars.
Well, before we do that, I must tell you, as Judy will verify, that it's actually Mr. Bean here.
Yeah.
I'm not actually Andrew. I'm actually Mr. Bean, as was posted on a forum when we did talk in Italy.
Okay, Mr. Bean, tell us about water on Mars, please.
So water on Mars, yes. This does continually get re-reported. I think it was originally reported years and years ago, and then it was reported in 2004, and then it was reported again as being discovered in 2009, I think, and they've had a couple of announcements in between that. So it's one of these things whereby they report these amazing discoveries as if they're new, and actually they're years old. And I think that the anti-gravity and levitation technology is like that, really, I think. So yeah.
I just heard about another planet or something. They just discovered there's all sorts of water all over the universe.
Yeah, well, all over the universe. John Lash actually says that there's water all over the universe.
I saw that on a mainstream TV show.
Really? Mm-hmm. Really? Yeah.
So
the,
we
discovered
that again in 10 years.
Yeah. So why are they keep sending these, billion-dollar...
Space wars.
They're saying, oh, we need another billion dollars because we're sending a rocket up to discover water on Mars. Well, Jesus, didn't you realise somebody already discovered that? Oops. Oh, sorry. Oh, that's right.
My satellite, that's it. There's actually quite a good quote that I came across on a forum. They are good for some things occasionally. And I really liked it because it summed up the whole sort of Mars mission. I sort of looked into this and found these things being reported as new when they're actually very old. Or, Gilbert Levin, who was one of the NASA scientists, he discovered life on Mars in 1976. And then NASA did 50 experiments to debunk his result. In other words, they paid him to form an experiment. The experiment worked and said, yes, there was life on Mars. And then they spent another year doing 50 experiments to disprove that one.
So they could rediscover it again.
Yeah, so they could discover it again later. But this quote I'll read is not a lot. It's really good. It's the sort of quote I would write, actually, but I didn't write it, I'm afraid. It says, "Let me give you the whole Mars conspiracy in a nutshell. I have no doubt that there's some real mind-blowing stuff going on Mars, and our governments know it. What they have to do is take people's minds off of Mars. They send these rovers up there. They send back pictures of basically nothing. The TV and internet are flooded with these pictures of nothing. Soon, the people get tired of looking at pictures of nothing and don't want to be bothered with Mars anymore. They trust that the government will make them aware of any important happenings on Mars should they occur. Of course, this will never happen. We, the taxpayers, paid for those rovers. We had a right to know when they were launched and how they landed. We have a right to see the pictures. So they give us a million pictures of nothing. Now we're so bored with the pictures that we really don't care anymore. They know we won't ask questions anymore for fear of being bored out of our minds." Which is exactly what these pictures show, you know, and the standard, things that they put out in the papers. But if you go and actually look at the pictures yourself, like this Ron Bennett has done, he's discovered all these little sort of things moving in these pictures from the Phoenix lander, and it's amazing. You know, that's come from Ron Bennett. He's not a NASA guy. You know, he's just some person on the internet who's downloaded them all and gone through and spent weeks and weeks and weeks doing it. You know, and I think that, you know, that's kind of what Dr. Judy's done. She's gone through all the pictures that she can find and found out what's happened. You know, so this really is, I think, is a lesson that if you want to find out, you've got to bloody go and look yourself. You know, these institutions that are just put there to sort of protect these so-called the received wisdom, as it were.
Yeah.
You can't trust them anymore, unfortunately, and it's a real shame.
Judy has an interesting quote, which is that Thermite is the grassy knoll in a comparison to the JFK 9/11 conspiracy, that, you know, if you want to find a conspiracy behind the JFK, they provide the grassy knoll for you to go to, and everything around there. And if you want to find a conspiracy within 9/11, then they provide Thermite as their
right.
You don't like the official story? Here we have an alternative.
Yeah,
just for you. Take your pick, you know, one or the other.
Yeah.
What, planes off Thermite?
You don't like Lee Harvey Oswald's story, you have the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
These are your two choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you don't like, the 19 bad guys with box cutters, well, you have this Thermite story.
Mm.
Yeah.
Don't look beyond those.
No.
Well, actually, I've just been doing some more research, and I've actually discovered that it was actually Marmite, not Thermite. Or it might have been Nano Marmite.
I don't know if our American friends know Marmite. Do you know Marmite?
No, they wouldn't. That's but no. I needed to make sure
it's a dreadful yeast extract thing that English people put on toast. It's horrible.
That's right. It is horrible. But that's why it was. That's why it's safe to blame 9/11 on Marmite.
I think it was Nano Marmite actually.
I tend to agree. But at least you can spread it on thick, you know, like this Thermite was supposedly done. So, you know.
And if anyone, this is Andrew Johnson who's speaking now, and Andrew has an excellent website called checktheevidence.com, and he has some excellent videos and information on there. He's got, you know, really good talks about the moon, Mars, 9/11. Alternatives, energy, gosh, just all kinds of stuff. Really?
Did you have levitating balls?
I've not got that on there yet. But
our friend Philip Lobo would be interested in that site.
Yeah.
As Andrew says, I've back engineered what happened on 9/11, and he's back engineered why you haven't heard about it until now.
Yeah.
It is. That's basically what the way it seems to have happened, and it's all rather peculiar looking back over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, really, that how we've ended up in this strange situation.
Mm.
But, I say to people, you know, all the information is there now. You know, you've just got to spend time going through it. They've tried to cover it up, but, I mean, they've sort of been successful in one way because, you know, as you said earlier on, Dr. Judy Wood has been going around the UK to sort of what we might call independent groups who are just doing their own thing, you know, and they're not really bothered what the other groups are doing. They're just, you know, wanting to get the information to give to people And that's what it seems to have come down to now, you know, and that's the way that we're getting information out.
On our site, the Friends of Freeman, the Friendship Agenda, the response to Judy coming on the show tonight has been phenomenal. So there are people in America who are interested in your work.
Great.
Mom and
well, I wonder if the information distribution channels in the U.S. are what more are controlled. Like those in the quote alternative, communication radio industry, they're sort of chased away from having me on without not so much the audience but the loudmouth.
The loudmouth, yeah. Well, what's American Freedom Radio? We've got a Franco Freighter X who hopefully is listening to this, and I'm pretty sure he'll have you on his show. He's quite a guy. He's a very good friend of John Lash's.
Great.
So he's a friend of yours, we believe.
Yeah.
Let's name drop if we can.
I'd just like to mention that Alex Jones has previously described or implied that Dr. Judy Wood is Marvin the Martian. And that particular audio clip is archived on my website for posterity.
I think we've bashed Alex Jones enough tonight. Let's leave the guy.
Are you sure? Are you sure about that?
The poor guy's not here to defend himself, so...
Well, you know, I'm sure he can defend himself on his own program if he wishes.
I'm sure he will, yeah.
So if you're listening, Freighter X, get in touch with Judy.
Yeah, call in.
Call in as well, yeah. Please do.
Absolutely.
Are you looking for smoke?
Break. No, obviously.
Radio silence.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. don't even think about it, guys.
Next we'll have Ace Baker calling in faking his own suicide.
I think Jesse Ventura's on the at the door as well.
Better be careful, you'll get them clockwork elves after you.
Yeah, it's certainly been a very interesting evening because a lot of from the first talks that I saw you doing, the new Hiroshima and those talks, your work has kind of I wouldn't say moved on, but expanded an awful lot, and it's quite a different talk that you give now, and very very interesting, just so much. I can't say it enough times. Buy the book. It's just such a great book. You know, the information in there is just phenomenal.
Hello, Freeman. You're on the line. You're on the air, sir.
Oh, fantastic.
Hello, mate.
Hello.
How do you think of this radio show? That makes you look stupid, doesn't it?
Sorry.
Sorry about that.
No, I didn't catch it.
Tried to phone in. I've been having some type 1 difficulties. We've now titled everything type 1, you know. So we have type 1 food, type 1 situations, type 1 metal, and type 1 radio.
Yay!
This open forum is just a blast. This is fantastic. You've got Judy Wood in your living room.
Yeah.
And you're all hanging out together. This is the Friendship Agenda at work. I mean, this is all of it. Everything we're hoping that we can all come together and start to just be human and hang out and share openly our lives with everyone else, right?
That's the plan.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. I think you're living up to the plan.
You know what, Freeman? It's funny, though, because this is just what we do anyway, and it takes an American guy perhaps to come forward and tell people it's all right just to hang out in your home with friends.
Yeah.
It's all right. Don't worry. Just hang out.
And then just air it to the world.
yeah, let's take it one more level.
Yeah, the fact that we're all doing this and we're making a bit of a kind of scene on it by putting it out on the airways around the world for everyone to kind of join in with. I mean, it's a bit like some of these corny television shows. I don't know if you get them in America, I'm sure you do, but we get these corny television shows where you get a group of kind of very minor celebrity people who come together and discuss kind of very boring topics of the week that have been on, you know, and they, you know, and they all say really funny, witty little things, or and
there's something written for them.
And they're on the TV at the time when Bored Housewives are looking for something to watch on the TV, and
I think we have an opportunity here to make a new program. We'll call it Mock the Week. But the American people wouldn't get that.
No, I didn't.
Thanks for the verification.
That was Mr. Bean talking to you there, Freeman.
It was indeed Mr. Bean. That's absolutely right.
We got all the celebrities with us tonight. Judy Wood, Mr. Bean, Freeman.
Yeah.
Who all's on here, actually? I've gotten lost.
It's kind of interesting hearing an American accent.
But this has always been Freeman's kind of raison d'etre, almost, or a really big part of his message is that just, you know, get together and share things, and it's okay just to hang out. Yeah, no agenda.
Except the friendship.
Set the friendship agenda.
Talking and sharing information.
We know they have an agenda to make us frightened of one another, and all of the CSI episodes and everything we see on television telling you to fear the humans. And, you know, I was in Australia, and after 44 years of walking around this planet, a little girl walked up to me and asked me to get something from the store shelf that she couldn't reach. This is the first time a child has made interaction with me. Because we're in Australia, you know, they're all like friendly there. They're human, and where in America we are all frightened, scared, and do not talk to that person. So even in the grocery store, we idly walk by, all living in our heads, not discussing anything, talking anything, discussing the chemtrails going over your grocery store. we're all like zombies walking around, and I've seen the other side of humanity. I was brought out on a vehicle, just, you know, cast myself adrift like Columbus or something, and found myself in a world of a sea of beauty, of people that were guiding me, that were leading my path, and that were giving and receiving from me. And this whole world opened up to me. And it was that experience that I want to transmit to everyone else in the world, to say, look, this is synchronicity, this is how life actually works, and the agenda is to make you completely disassociate with anything of this type of nature. And so we're going to show it to them, right, guys?
Absolutely. And we are
showing them
right now.
Right.
And I think that message is more important in America than over here, because I think we've got a more kind of fluid society, a more kind of fluid relationship with our friends and neighbours, because where we live, I mean,
Are you saying we're better than Americans?
No.
America number one.
Number one in cancer. Number one.
What I've noticed is the biggest difference between, you know, the U.S. and here is that it seems like, you know, nobody has to be identical here.
No.
And it's okay if you're a little different.
We can have rubbish teeth, I mean.
Right. Well, you weren't raised on that glam of, Angelina Jolie and such.
Yeah.
You don't have to have breasts that look like this. You don't have to have teeth that look like this. You don't have to have hair that looks like this. You just have to look like how you look, for God's sake.
Well, that's what's so important about right now, is that we can hear that opinion from you. I mean, that's amazing. I know it took the Illuminati and their World Wide Web and CERN to punch a hole into the other dimension so that we could see what it's like to live in England. But
in a bus in America.
But it's like in the U.S., it seems that everyone has to be in lockstep with something, or else they're not okay. And the variety isn't so much there. You can't feel free to be different.
And also through the whole kind of frat system that goes on when you go to college, that, you know, you've got to join your group, you've got to be part of your frat group, and associate with the group that you can get in with. Basically, are you cool enough to be with you know, the cool kids, or are you, you know, the, I don't know, whatever other groups that there are, you know, but it's immediately, as you're growing up, it's putting you into little blocks of people. You can't just flit amongst people. And I know that I've heard Freeman saying that, well, hell, I mixed with the, you know, the metalheads, and I mixed with the hippies and the all kinds of different people. And this is it. You know, you can be fluid from group to group to group. You and just exploring yourself and, you know, saying, well, you know, I like this kind of music and I'm going to dress like this. Well, that's fine. Great. Do that. But you can still, you don't have to label yourself as, right, I am just this. You could go and do flower arranging.
You can occupy your own home.
You can occupy your own home. Yeah, you don't have to go and follow the group mentality. You can still be an individual. Yeah.
But we do live in Brighton, which is a bubble of Britain.
But you know they're occupying tonight in Brighton.
Are they?
They are.
Where are they occupying?
Oh, a pub, I think.
Yeah, we were wondering how long the occupiers will last during the snow. I mean, I'm right there with you. Occupy your home. That's really the situation. And
we can't afford to occupy our homes. The electricity costs too much now. Now, what we need, though, actually, that's true, though, because if you get lots of people to come and occupy your home, then you just you'll generate
a lot of heat.
A lot of heat there, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we
and that's free energy.
We can just all rub up against each other.
Static.
Against static.
Well, you know, every hippie has a dog, too.
Is that why they smell?
Dogs love against things, don't they?
So it's a fantastic world out there. It really is.
Where are you at right now, Freeman? Where's the Miss Emily?
Well, we are sitting in a snowbank, about 9 inches of snow fell today.
Well, I just heard this on the weather this morning. They were saying that East Coast of America is experiencing some heavy snowstorms at the moment.
I can confirm that.
But you know,
I don't know,
you get it, we get it apparently. So
how far south
really
does it
mild.
Go?
It's a pleasant 85 where I'm at.
Arizona.
It goes sort of from Washington right up to
so
New York, I think.
Freeman, what is your location?
Our current agenda is to we have just left from the Sassafras Island meeting, and you know met with the Type 1 Congress. Of course, that came live on the show last week, right?
Yeah,
God, you know when you live on the road, your weeks are a whole lot longer. It's amazing. You can pack so much in; it's ridiculous. That couldn't have been this last week. Anyway, so we are hanging out in Pennsylvania, working our way to Philadelphia so that we can then start to prepare the Type 1 Roadshow, start looking into places. We're going to meet up with the Tesla Foundation, and they have us scheduled with their TV studio there so that we can film some portions there. I've already uploaded a couple of shots from Miss Emily. We've not shown you the inside yet. We got to keep everybody wanting to see more, right?
Yeah.
So we went over all the improvements that happened to Miss Emily after breaking down and happening to land right into our wonderful friend's truck repair shop. So all of that went very well and better than we could have ever believed or expected. And that's the beauty of life is, you know, you get more than you expect, but if you only get what you expect, if you only expect, you got to let it flow, you know, you got to open the door. But so she's all set up, ready to go, and we'll be broadcasting the Free Zone live tonight.
Yay!
Straight out of there, so we'll make sure that...
We have Free Zone on Sunday mornings on the podcast. So
we can't stay up that late.
We can't stay up that late.
All right.
We look forward to breakfast with Freeman.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to give you the lowdown of everything that happened, and that's about all I've got for you tonight is really what's going on in our world. We'll start digging into the rest of the world here really soon. But the Type 1 Roadshow is really not scheduled to begin until spring, and we're going to start really digging in now and getting it all set up and working everything out. So I'm going to meet all the guys down there, the Art Corner crew, Mark Passio, the Tesla Foundation.
Wow, that's great,
and we're going to, you know, coordinate this whole thing and get it ready for spring.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Oh, spring on the road will be brilliant. Have you got your chains?
Can't wait. Yes.
Have you got your chains for your wheels?
Yeah, I wish. Another prime message that I always want to give to people is that we do this on a zero budget. I mean, everything I've done, all my broadcasts, TV shows, anything that I've done, and then all my travels and everywhere I've gone have all been done with absolutely zero federal dollars. So, you know,
hang on, I send you $5 a month.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, And I wish more would, you know. we stay at a zero budget is the way it works.
If anyone's listening, go to the Freeman, was it Freeman?
No, on the Friendship Agenda now, on the front page, there is a little chip in there for the Type 1 Roadshow. Freeman put up that last night, didn't you, mate?
Yes.
Yeah, but if you go to Freeman's own page, there's a $5 a month, it's nothing. It's like a newspaper, you know, newspaper a day.
Yeah.
Just
that's just operational funds, honestly. You know, I'm honestly not getting rich. And then we put up a new system now that you can sponsor the Type 1 Roadshow. And so all of this money will go towards getting this conference together, getting everybody together, and keeping us on the road to get it all. So you can go to freemantv.com or over at thefriendshipagenda.com, and there's you choose your level that you want to be. You could be ground crew, pilot, or an astronaut, and that's how much you want to give in every month to the Type 1 Roadshow. And then we're going to bring you Tesla coils and scientists and permaculture experts and live road shows that are leaving permaculture gardens out in everybody's front yards. You know, you're not paying for nothing. I'm out here. I'm doing it. And that's because everyone has believed so deeply in me that I have to go do it. So I've given myself over to this whole thing. And because of the financial support that we do receive, I feel bound and determined to make this a reality. And
yeah, come on folks, $5 a month or whatever you can afford.
You know, I was in America many years ago, and I was really amazed at how everything costs money. Just to do anything, it just costs money to do anything or be entertained in any small way. You want to go to like see some beautiful trees or rock formations, and somebody's made it into a park, and you have to pay to go in there to go and see these things. And it's not really so much like that over here.
Yeah.
But we're about to go across the Jersey and Pennsylvania Turnpike. Now, they are going to rape me. It's probably going to be about $75 to drive 150 miles because of bridges, tolls, and other...
God, yeah. You can't even just get from A to B without having to pay.
That's not even the gas. I'm not even at, you know, that's not that's just tolls.
Yeah.
And if you make a wrong turn, forget about it. It's another 18.
Oh, dear, yeah.
It's true. You should have seen the bureaucracy. We had to jump it through to get in the bus. Ridiculous.
Yeah, we watched you. Well, how many tests did you have to sit?
Well, I had six photographs from the DMV, ended up with four licenses, each of which I had to pay for. And they were like, oh, sorry, we made a mistake. That'll be $13. And then they say, well, why did they charge you over there? It's not supposed to be $13. It's $10. Can you give us that now? And I'm like, what is going on here? Not to mention driving back and forth through to the Capitol to square it all away. Yeah, it was a bureaucratic nightmare. And just to drive the darn thing. And, of course, we've been driving it the whole time to go and get the stuff. And,
yeah, sure. Right?
You know, we were well equipped to drive the bus, but... It was amazing to witness what you have to go through. Mm-hmm. They would say, you know, oh, okay, we'll call you back, and next thing you know, you're sitting there just waiting for the phone call. But this is all my skit for tonight, so I'm heading all the way today. I'm just really excited that you guys are pulling this all together, hosting and allowing other people to just be guests and hosts, and that you've got Judy Wood in your living room, and that everything...
Kitchen.
It's going great.
It's so pedantic, isn't it, Stephen?
Well, it's a Type 1 radio line just for everybody, and we urge everybody who's listening to
do
your own show,
all the friends,
get involved.
Just phone in and come in and say hi
and
just tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world and get friends round and get them to kind of join in with what's going on. It'd be really great.
Yeah, and we're coming up to like 5 minutes to the end of the live show, but we're just going to continue because we've got another hour there. So if you want to keep listening, you need to ring in so you can still hear the show. Otherwise,
if not, download the podcast, listen to it.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. But we're here. You going to stay with us, Freeman, for an hour?
No, I've got to run. I've got to eat and then prepare for the free zone. So.
Okay. Of course.
Okay.
Which will be? Plug your show, mate.
Yeah, tell us what's on the free zone.
All right, freemantv.com, freeman.tv. Jump on over to the Freeman Radio Zone. You got the chat and the listen right there. It's. I mean, I think everybody listening tonight mostly knows. But it's 8 p.m. Central, and there's a countdown clock if you don't want to do the math. It's in a few hours, right?
And then also, Freighter X will be on after your show.
Radio Free Humanity. Yeah. Just jump on over to radiofreehumanity.com and you can check it out there.
Or the podcast afterwards.
It's so cool just to be able to say, gee, thanks, Freeman. And because normally, you know, I just listen to the Free Zone in the mornings and just think, well, this is great. But now I can say, well, thanks, Freeman.
In person.
It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, and I hope to be talking with you guys a whole lot more now.
Lots of love to Jamie and Monty Python out there with you. Is Monty still with you?
Yeah, they're both right here. Lots of love to you guys from the Type 1 Radio.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a month.
And Diva. Okay. Let's not forget Diva.
Diva?
Diva's with you.
Our little poodle.
Oh!
She's got her own Friends of Freeman profile.
Oh, yeah. Oh, was that you with it?
Yeah.
Because I used to have a poodle called Sparky, and I asked Diva, did she know Sparky? And she never replied, so I figured, nah.
I thought Diva was a troll.
No. But it's absolutely fantastic because we're just linking up with all the Friendship Agenda members, and we're just driving our bus to there and there and there, and it's a grand time for everybody involved. It's an amazing thing to do, and I can't wait to get it all up in the videos and show it all to you. And you know, we get to meet all of each other. Pretty soon, we'll be out there back to the UK, and we'll all.
Oh, hey, that would be great.
Yeah.
Well, after the mine.
How far south are you going?
Florida, Texas, maybe Guatemala.
Okay, so you can meet up with Judy on the way.
Oh, yeah?
She'll come see you, for sure, yeah.
She's nodding.
She's a lovely lady.
Okay, well, I'll write her and see what she says. Are you on the air? I mean, I don't know if you're in there, Judy. The sea of voices.
Yes,
oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So whereabouts are you, Judy?
Near Greenville.
Greenfield.
Greenville,
South Carolina. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So any friends of Freeman who are in the Greenville or in South Carolina, then just get in touch with Judy, friend her up, and you know, get her in touch with Freeman. So
fantastic.
Thank you so much, Freeman. It's been really great to talk to you, and we look forward to hearing you, or I look forward to hearing you tomorrow morning. And Freighter X 2.
Right,
so
on.
Have a great day.
You too.
We're going to play a bit of music now. We're going to play some music from. Actually, this is a tune. I don't know if the podcast is going to go up that we recorded the other night, but this is a tune that we played on that, which is from our good friend Azoth.
Who's sat right here?
Who's sitting here?
And. He'd still be listening.
Called Great White Hunter Man.
Younger one sunny diggle across the afternoon, whilst on safari in the outer limit of the Venusian polyester bushland. With crystal antelope ride humpback caterpillars in the glow of the midnight sun, while perspex tadpoles dance in the shade of a one-legged handstand. I was in search of an extremely rare species of greater Madagascan purple-headed paisley man-eating butterfly. When all of a sudden I happened to come across the most extraordinary tribe of giant elastic dwarf pygmies drinking custard from a clockwork teapot. As I studied this peculiar primitive ritual through the rainbow-tinted lens,
I had encountered this exact same strange phenomenon once before whilst on expedition in the pride lands of the Serengeti Tundra. Whilst participating in the ancient Germanic tea ceremony of the marshmallow onion. In honor of the great candy floss realism, it was just then that I noticed that I also was being observed from above.
He's the great white hunter man, of the great collector.
Thank you.
Well, tonight we've got Judy Wood with us, and things are a little bit chaotic here because we've got a load of people in our little kitchen area here at Area 51. And everybody wants to talk to Judy, and everybody's got questions that, or little things that just need clarifying. And it's not that people don't believe what you're saying. It's that just these little things are like, well, what do you mean by this, or what do you mean by that? It's not like, ah, that's rubbish. You're talking, ah, it's a load of old, you know, tosh. It's so good to actually have you here in the flesh, so we can just say these little things, you know. And so while you're here, and we've got, I think, another hour of broadcast left, I thought it would be quite a nice idea, just because I've got your hefty volume of your book here with me as well. And I've just read your book, and it is absolutely stunning, not just the information, but the amount of research that you have done personally into the whole thing. You don't just sort of make a speculation about, oh, it could be this. You put... You know, like mathematical equations in there that show how this effect works. So it's an extremely concise and beautifully well presented book. And so I just thought we could perhaps go through in the last hour, which isn't really very long, go through a few points from this. And I'm going to start off The first point that we're going to talk about is a very, it's almost comical, which is the idea of an aeroplane-shaped hole appearing in the buildings after an aeroplane is supposed to have gone through it. Now, we're not going to discuss whether aeroplanes went through or whether this or whether that, but just the fact that we were told an aeroplane went into the building and then there's this aeroplane-shaped hole almost to kind of underline it. An aeroplane went in the building and an aeroplane-shaped hole, so it must have been an aeroplane. It must have been an aeroplane. You know, there's almost like a kind of panic about this thing that they thought people might not perhaps get it, so they had to put an aeroplane-shaped hole there just so people really got the aeroplane-shaped hole. And you make a good example of this, that when Roadrunner goes through things in his cartoons, he leaves a Roadrunner-shaped hole because it's a cartoon, for
right.
God's sake.
Right. Wile E. Coyote gets his Acme steel plate.
Yeah.
He holds it up to try to catch the Roadrunner, and then something whoosh goes through, and who's that? He looks at his Acme steel plate and it's got this
shape that looks like a Roadrunner.
Yeah. Ah, that was
it was Roadrunner. Yeah. So what went into the buildings? An aeroplane? Oh, there's a shape of an aeroplane.
Must be an aeroplane,
of course. So, yeah, that's quite a funny point that I just thought was...
WBAI clip that I played earlier today where the guy on the radio show...
That's really funny, actually. Yeah. Judy's got a clip of this guy... And
he's on
9/11, he's doing a live radio show, and he decides to turn the TV on to get a bit more information on what's going on. And in the background, you can hear the TV going, and the TV goes, and there's an aeroplane-shaped hole in the building.
No, he says, aeroplane-shaped hole.
And the guy repeats this, and he always trips himself up with a little giggle as he says, an aeroplane-shaped hole in the building. He manages to retain his composure at the end of it, doesn't he? Yeah.
But it shows real immediate response. Yeah, that's how
people
would really respond.
Yeah, that's it. And another really interesting point that you make as well about those kind of just crazy, bizarre things that went on for the day was that you make a comparison to the fact that when Orson Welles did the famous
War of the Worlds
on the radio over America and people were really believing what was going on, a lot of the fact that they really believed and took this story in was because there were no commercial breaks during this. So it was just running and running and running.
Must be serious.
It's important and serious. And when the Twin Towers events occurred, they cut their commercial breaks on the major TV station. No commercial breaks. So this was serious and it was a story that was running and running and running, and there were no breaks, so people couldn't get a chance to go, oh, let's have a cup of tea. Oh, an airplane-shaped hole in the buildings. Isn't that a bit funny? Oh, or just any other kind of things that came up that made people question what was going on.
And
there was none of that.
And if a break, you would have time to contemplate, am I going to buy that or not?
And when there were kind of times for breaks from the TV studios, they seemed to fill it with little kind of clips of reporters on the streets. And I've seen a few things of like 9/11 clues, September clues. It's quite interesting in its breakdown of the coverage of the media by 9/11, which kind of shows a lot of how there was just an awful lot of I
didn't really pay so much attention to that. I guess I choose to pick my own,
right.
You know, what I observe in the way I observe it and just see what I see.
Yeah.
But what was so interesting about, again, how they didn't have ad breaks and what
it was
really,
constant, wasn't it? Constant.
Right.
So even the breaks from like media studios went to people on the street. So they then took over.
But what I found,
but it was constant.
Yeah, right. So people didn't have a chance to stop and think about what it means. But one of the things I found really, I guess, suspicious that got me thinking, am I going to buy this or not? You know, is this really what it looks like it is or what they say it is? Was that I had rabbit ears then, not cable, limited number of channels. You have to tweak the antenna each channel. But as I turn the channels, they're all playing the same tune, all playing the same thing. Usually what you would get is, you know, up close and personal with this person. They drove their loved one to the airport that morning. Someone else designs buildings. Someone else designs or flies airplanes. And but instead, the same picture, the same story on each of the channels.
On all the channels, yeah.
That was bizarre.
It's like a script.
Yeah.
Yeah, was going on there. So those were just a few sort of things that came up. Now, something that I found very disturbing in the book, and which you kind of say as well, is a very disturbing thing to look into, but that you have to look into to get an understanding of what was going on, and that's the jumpers, or the people who fell from the building.
Who left the building.
Who left the building, let's say, because, yeah. And, yeah, the first responders there, the firemen, they had never seen so many people leave a building,
jumping out,
a building that was a building in danger. Like, say they'd been to fires or something, they'd never seen so many people. I mean, many people just burn in fires because they don't want to jump. So jumping from, like, a 110-floor building, you just know you're going to die if you do that. What would make you do that? Because people just usually die in the fire rather than make the decision that I'm just going to jump. And
well, not only that, is if you really know that you're, for sure, know that you're going to cook, and many of them were waiting for somebody to come rescue. They didn't think the building was going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, sit and wait. But then it's just kind of bizarre behavior, too, for somebody who's supposedly hot. At Virginia Tech, we had some fraternities goofing around and cranked up the thermostat in the swimming pool. And I used to swim every morning. Went over there and I said, well, swim at your own risk. Well, hey, I hate getting in cold water. Mm-hmm. This is great. It was 92 or 93 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Fahrenheit, and so I got in, go trucking across the pool, get about halfway across, and I realize I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I'm heating up faster than I can get rid of heat.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, okay, I'll roll over my back and just relax and quit putting out extra heat. And they knew I was kind of in trouble, and somebody threw me a rope. And I remember, is it really worth reaching over to get that rope?
Mm.
I was just so lethargic.
From the heat, yeah.
To think, is it worth reaching over to get the rope? That's the kind of mental process. That's why you have a limitation of how long you stay in a hot tub,
mm-hmm.
or in a sauna, because you get too lethargic to be able to get out. Your muscles don't operate. Now, consider the towers. They're like, especially that Melissa Doi. Of course it's hot. I'm burning up. I can't breathe. You know, I'm choking. You never heard her?
She was in a real panic. This is a transcript which Judy has in her book from a lady called Melissa, Doi, who unfortunately, I think she was, her body was found. She jumped from the tower, hadn't she?
No,
or they didn't find her body.
I didn't remember anything about that, but they recorded her on...
But her transcript of her speaking with a 911 operator.
For 5 minutes. And they allowed us to hear that segment for the Massawi, you know, trial. Massawi was not tried. That was a sentence in hearing. They hadn't confessed, but they told us it was a trial. So people think somebody was
trying to convict. What was this? I don't know what this is. Massawi trial, what's that?
In the spring of 2006, we're told it's the 20th hijacker. It's repeated so many times, you know, the Massawi trial.
I don't know this.
The 20th hijacker, supposedly.
Right. Was this a hijacker that didn't get on or something?
Something like that. And they, you know, got him to confess based on some kind of promise, because later on he said, you know, kind of like people reneged, he wanted to retract his confession because they weren't following through with what they promised him.
Right.
But there's the sentencing hearing. They couldn't have tried him because... Heck, you know my billiard ball example?
Yeah.
That's reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And so, but they got him to confess. And then they had the sentencing hearing that they played up like a trial So the whole world thought that somebody was tried and convicted.
Right, okay.
And so one of the exhibits
justice
for
is being seen to be done.
Right.
Yeah.
The Melissa Doi clip for 5 minutes
mm-hmm.
was part of that evidence that was released to the world. So for 5 minutes, we hear Melissa Doi talk about how she's burning up. You don't talk about burning up for 5 minutes and not be done.
And she's in a panic when she's talking as well.
I'm burning up. I can't breathe. I'm choking.
Yeah.
You never heard her choke.
You didn't hear her cough. You didn't hear anybody around her cough. Yet she says the smoke in the room where she is.
Right.
But, I mean, you call it fumes in your
probably
book.
Probably it was like lather.
Right. There was some kind of fuming going on. We won't call it smoke, but something was happening there.
She thought she was burning up.
Yeah.
Kind of like what the active denial system might be doing.
Active denial. If you haven't checked out...
Not that that's what it was.
We're not saying that's what it was, but there was some kind of energy field that is making you very hot.
Making you feel hot.
Feel hot, and that you have to get away from. Well, she felt hot, but perhaps jumpers were in a position where they were feeling a field that was just like the active denial, where they just had to get away from it straight away.
Right.
And because I've seen journalists on YouTube being kind of experimenting, guinea pigs, that's the word I'm looking for the active denial system, and they can't stand more than 3 seconds before they have to kind of split straight away. And they're in nice cozy fields somewhere in the countryside. Mm-hmm. They're not in a building that they believe is on fire or that is in some.
If
so,
your hand is on a burner, if you have a electric stove.
Yeah, you can hold it for so long and then
not just hold it for so long. It's like, let's say you accidentally put your hand down a red hot burner.
Ow! You take it off straight away.
You don't stop and debate and think, well, should I take it off?
Yeah.
It's not a choice.
You don't even think, let's see how long I can hold it there, which is what the journalists were doing in these cases. They were seeing how long. And 3 seconds was as long they could.
I'm sure they had turned down for them too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if they want to ramp that thing up. Yeah. So
with Melissa Doi, if she was physically hot, like as in a thermometer, registering it, rather than some other sensation, it'd be like a hot tub or a sauna. And
I
use lethargic. I'm burning up.
Yeah.
It is this hyper state that
people
are not in when they're overheating for 5 minutes.
Yes, yeah, because you can stand heat. It's like the bathtub that heats up. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You can stand that heat and...
But relaxes.
Yeah, but relaxes you. Exactly, yeah. So there's some really interesting clues going on within...
What you think it is.
Yeah, well, and the fact that the fire crews were saying that it was raining people at times... And as I said earlier, they had never seen this many people. Many of the fire crews, I suspect, had never even seen somebody jump from a burning building. It's not something...
Once in their 20-year career.
Yeah, whereas...
How many?
Do people... It shocked
like
me.
1,200 people.
Yeah.
From the North Tower.
1,200 people.
Went out the windows.
Jumped from that tower.
So in the 3,000 people that they saying that perished. That's
they're
included.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's
the people that went missing.
Right. So half the people seem to jump for no apparent reason.
Or not necessarily jump, but I would say
just
they went
expel
out
themselves from the building.
And not necessarily.
Or even.
We don't know for sure.
Right.
Even how they went out the window.
Yeah.
There's some that like this one particular fellow who looks like he's trying to flap his wings, like as though he accidentally somehow fell out the window.
Like, shit, I jumped out the window. What the fuck did I do that for?
Or where am I? It's
yeah.
not that he even thought. It could be
it may be a disorientation.
Or somebody pushing that or something.
Levitation.
Yeah. But maybe something like that could have been happening.
Who's like 100 feet from the building.
This is another point that you're making in the book is that there's no... I think I'm right in saying that there's no evidence of people bouncing off the building?
Not that you can see, but there's people some distance from the building. You'd think there's a bumpity bump down the edge, but
yeah.
I looked at the Olympic record for 1900s, which should be
a long
standing jump.
Yeah.
Because that okay, people who are in a building with their street shoes or whatnot, that's probably equivalent to the early...
Yeah, if you want to decide to jump out of a window and you make a run and jump, yeah.
And the standing broad jump, that with the biggest... Oh, by the time you get down to the about the 45th floor or so, because you can see where one of these mechanical floors are.
Yeah.
How far could you have drifted outward if you're still coasting outward at that particular rate?
Yeah.
And you had to jump from the top floor at, you know, world's record standing broad jump effort. And still, that's a little bit far to be that far away from the building.
Mm.
You kind of wonder, is there a wind that picks them up or what?
Something is pushing them right out there. Yeah.
There are actually body parts found. That's, you know, would be...
That's another weird thing, but yeah. Another book. Excellent.
Several blocks down.
Yeah, yeah. In one of the pictures you showed tonight, you said, oh, and that's a leg there.
Oh, there's a...
Which
a,
is quite disturbing.
Gruesome, but this firefighter who said... he was at the corner of Church and VC, and he said, well, there's a guy who came up and needed help with a leg. It wasn't his leg, it was somebody else's leg.
Hmm.
it's weird stuff like that. It was just horrible. And think what this is doing to these firefighters and first responders. This was not normal.
Yeah, it's putting them in a state of... Well,
they were stepping
just,
around
yeah.
the bodies without realizing these are bodies because they had to tune it out.
Yeah.
It was just...
It's a disassociation, isn't it, going on there? So you're not really witnessing what's going on. You've disassociated
right.
yourself from
right.
the situation.
Trauma-based mind control.
Yeah, is what might have been going on. I think we spoke to... I've made a little thing about thermite here, but I think we spoke about thermite earlier, did we, on the show, or was that when we were at the talk?
Yeah, it was Marmite you talked about.
Right, we spoke about Marmite, but obviously the opposition to not, I won't say the opposition, but the official or the alternative look into 9/11 involves this idea that thermite was used to create a controlled demolition. So. Thermite is a cutting tool, is it not? It's used for cutting. It melts and cuts. Okay, so building...
It takes a while to cut, because, especially if steel is thick, because you can only put it on the surface, and it has to work by thermal conductivity, so you have to wait for the heat to kind of keep sinking into the material.
Mm-hmm. And things that I've seen on YouTube of thermite being used, that... Wow.
Like a giant sparkler.
Yeah, it's really bright. It's a big sparkler. It's like a big firecracker. And the buildings, when they came down, there was very little left of them.
Burnt, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That's it. When the buildings disappeared.
When they came apart. Yeah.
When they came apart. Yeah, the end result was that there was very little material left. And I've heard kind of 9/11 truth. If I can use that term to kind of describe mm-hmm. the people who use the thermite theory, that they say that, well, you know, the thermite turned it to dust and destroyed all that material. Now, to destroy that much material with thermite, well, just
melt. So you have a big glop of stuff.
Well, yeah, melted stuff, yeah, should be there. But also, the whole building would have just shone in a blinding light with the amount of thermite that it would have taken to complete, and the heat would have been just tremendous. We would have seen something like a supernova happening in front of us,
mm-hmm.
But we don't. We just see this building turn to dust, and their way of explaining the fact that it doesn't impact the ground, we'll go into that in a little moment, is that, well, the thermite or thermate, whatever, marmite, whatever term you want to use, got rid of all the material within the building, and that's why there is no building left. It was just dust. But the fact is that thermite merely cuts stuff
or melts it,
and that to have a controlled demolition, the floors would have had to pancake down on one another, and so we would have had a nice stack of pancaked floors there.
And a hammer going boom, 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 boom on the ground, bedrock.
On the bedrock. Okay, but the seismic report or what? Not report. The seismic
magnitude was insufficient, right. And also lasted too short.
Yeah.
The ground shook for 8 seconds for the North Tower.
Yeah.
It takes 9.5 seconds to throw a bowling ball off the roof and have it hit the pavement.
Yeah. And the King Dome, which was only how many stories?
It was like 250 feet high. It was pretty short.
It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't a really. It was a big building, but it wasn't. You know, wasn't even a third as big as the Twin Towers.
Potential energy wise, mass in the height at whatever height, it was 1/30th of a Twin Tower.
Right. And how long did that take to fall to the ground?
Well, the ground shook for like 52 seconds.
Right, 52 seconds for that one.
It would take, throwing a bowling ball off the roof, it would take 3.9 seconds to the pavement.
Right. But it shook for
52 seconds.
52 seconds. Whereas when the Twin Towers fell, the ground had a small seismic wave.
Then less than the length of time it would take for a bowling ball.
For a bowling ball to fall off.
But the most significant part of this is that with the King Dome, as well as with an earthquake that was in Midtown Manhattan, those both show a P wave and an S wave arrival. That is the primary wave and the secondary wave. And you look at how much delay there is between those two, and it gives you an indication of how far away the event is. As those waves travel through the Earth, then the third kind of wave you have is surface waves. The towers only made a surface wave. No P wave, no S wave. It did not travel through the Earth for any of the Building 7 or Tower 1 and Tower 2.
So for a controlled demolition of a pancake collapse, you would most definitely have had an Earth traveling signal,
yes,
which didn't occur. And for thermite to have completely pulverized supposedly the floors, it would have just looked like a supernova occurring, which obviously it didn't.
No, it wouldn't pulverize, it would melt.
Melt. So these two things just don't add up.
It's also talked about how the military has thermite.
Oh,
you know what they use
the military have thermite for? What do they use it for?
Well, a couple of things. They used to use it for melting gun barrels, so when they invade enemy territory, they don't have to scoop up all their guns and haul them away. They used to melt the gun barrels so they can't use them.
Right.
The other thing they use it for, if the enemy is invading your territory and you don't want them to get a hold of your top secret documents, you have a thermite grenade to toss it out. Poof! All your papers get burned up.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It's used for burning paper.
And what was left after
the
World Trade Centers came down?
Paper.
There was just tons and tons. In fact, I saw a clip tonight of a reporter desperately trying to find words to describe what he was seeing. And there was a burnt-out car, but there was paper in it. And he was saying, I can't remember what it was now, but he said some weird kind of thing.
Burnt-out paper.
Yeah, we've got the... that's right, the remains of burnt-out paper. I love that. That's why he was really struggling for something to kind of describe what...
Yeah.
Oh, my God, he could see a burnt-out car and paper in it. So how does that work? How did that paper get in that car?
Really,
it's really burned out paper.
Things are totally melted, totally gone, but fortunately this car still has its melted engine. or they're still trying to figure out what vehicle that is that flies the Con Edison.
This is another really funny thing as well, that you point out that the only filing cabinet to be retrieved from the World Trade Centers was kind of this weird, it's this weird squidgy blob of...
It's not squashed.
It's not squashed, okay.
It's crinkled up like a...
Right, like a piece of paper that might crinkle up like that.
The guy who collected it described it as the size of a basketball.
Right.
and it had unburned paper in it. You know,
unburned paper in it.
A red divider and a blue divider, and it had money in it. Ooh. And they found out whose money it was. It belonged to Ben and Jerry's ice cream store.
Cool.
And they returned the money, the cash, to the Ben and Jerry's store.
So wow. That was... that.
Did the Ben and Jerry's melted?
Probably over, you know, days or whatever, ambient temperatures. Probably but get cool for the night.
That's so bizarre, isn't it? That a whole kind of cabinet...
That was
could
the
look,
only one, the entire...
yeah, that one, only one could be found, and it looks like it's, to like an untrained observer, it looked like it had melted
paper?
By heat, but it had paper inside
it. So it wasn't really melted. It looked like a, you get a big bunch of paper wadded up into the size of a round thing. It kind of looked like that, except it was metal.
Yeah. Jeez. With paper inside it, so obviously it wasn't heat that did this.
Right.
That's
same
a
with a few
bizarre
coins, because
scenario.
You can still identify the coins. Nothing is melted there, including coins that had zinc on the inside and copper on the outside, pennies.
Okay.
Zinc
has got a higher...
before copper even melts.
Right.
And it has a very low boiling temperature and melting temperature, but the zinc boils before copper melts.
So the zinc, if there had been heat involved in that, the zinc would have boiled before the copper could have melted, and so they wouldn't just be fused together.
Kind of
doesn't make sense.
Or, you know,
yeah.
And it doesn't seem disruptive. So how does it melt together if you don't even get above the melting temperature of zinc?
Yeah. You blow my mind, Judy.
And even better yet, with these globs of stuff together, you have unburned paper. I should have picked a different picture for that layers of paper. There's one I have that says expenses on it. You can read the word expenses on the paper. You think they want to burn that.
Yeah.
Along with Enron papers.
Exactly.
And they also found his passport, didn't they?
I don't know about that. That's the story we're told.
That's a conspiracy.
We don't deal in conspiracies.
He said, she said, who said, what said. Remember, I spent my growing years in Missouri, the show me state.
How would that have got out
the show me state. That's it. Show me.
Yeah, I need to see it. And I can take somebody's word for it. Or so-and-so said that so-and-so saw that maybe this person said that person saw. I need to see it myself.
Yeah, Chinese whispers. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like that with kids, you know, they have arguments and blah, 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 blah. And, well, so that, and you just go to the point and say, right, what did you say? What did you, and, you know, get to the point of it. Let's not talk about what so and so said or so and so said or so and so said.
What's the issue?
Yeah. What's the issue here? Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead. Yeah.
So, I've been thinking, what's your view on the, as we watch the towers?
Go away.
Would you agree that they're a projectile?
It's sort of like effervescing. You know, when you drop an Alka-Seltzer tablet into a glass of water, it almost looks like it's got jet propulsion in there. I mean, the way the effervescence
we watched
in
that. But would you say that they seem to, the projectiles, as the building disappears, that they have a path?
Well, it's sort of frothing up, and it does sort of kind of go up and over it like an arc.
What do you think might have been causing... I'm just trying to get my head around the idea that...
Any kind of...
some kind of force.
Like
because those objects must have quite heavy... They must be quite heavy.
But the effervescing equivalent, whatever they're doing, the frothing up... It's very energized, almost like jet propulsion, kind of, you know, it seems to be very energized, like an Alka-Seltzer tablet has a lot of energy kind of release when it effervesces.
But it was interesting
releasing themselves and spinning around each other.
The Judy shows a shot of Building 7 with the smoke pouring out the side, and, sorry, I used the wrong term, fumes. pouring out the side, very black material, but where there are holes and what seems to
busted out windows,
but there's no fire licking out or smoke coming out
or
from there.
Fumes coming out. Is
yeah, it's all just coming from the side, and it seems
from
yeah,
to roof.
And it seems to kind of be coming out with
wow.
a real force, but then all of a sudden, yeah, all of a sudden
turn
kind
around.
Of going back on itself. So it's kind of pushing out and then coming back on itself and pushing out and coming.
Well, it's kind of spiral, around going south, but comes out the east face. But it's very energized. If something was pushing its way out, you'd have a traffic jam there at that intersection.
It would be coming out of all orifices to release
right.
itself
so
into the outside world. Yeah. It wouldn't just be coming out of that one side of the building.
It's
would come out of...
energetically coming out.
Very energetically, yeah. So it makes you wonder...
sucked out by a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, yeah. As if it's been sucked and then...
Not just a vacuum cleaner, but something pulling it out.
There's an energy, some kind of energy field there which is pulling it out and then throwing it back in on itself. And you just mentioned there about, or someone mentioned about an energy, magnetic field.
Yeah, well, when you
and
do
I think,
experiment
yeah,
you
the old iron filings
thing.
Thing.
Mm-hmm. Threat happens with magnetic fields.
Yeah,
you
they go back in on themselves, don't they?
Patterns,
I think that's something you use in the book, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I kind of hinted it looks like a magnetic field, just showing that that's a field effect. Because you don't see a field, you just see the effects of it.
Right,
it's
yes. Exactly. You, I remember being amazed by that as a child,
and
that here was this piece of metal, and then you just sprinkle iron filings around, and it creates this pattern. And it's like, well, that's what's coming
yeah.
from this piece of metal, this field effect.
And so there's some other kind of field that appears to be operating on this. Like you see in the south face of Building 7, it sort of looks like one of those magnets. You see the poles. And there's this couple of dark lines in the middle, and it seems to be going around that.
Yeah.
And if it's a different type of energy, not magnetic necessarily, but something else that attracts the atoms in some kind of way.
Yeah, something we don't really understand.
But it sure looks like that.
Yeah.
And because these particles seem to be on a mission. They're going somewhere. They know where they're going.
Yeah.
It's not that they're wafting randomly away.
Yeah. And that's something that you talk about with the towers generally, not just Building 7, that there's this, there seems to be like a frothing up
mm-hmm.
goes on within them, as if whatever kind of field is interplaying with the buildings is
also the frothing up. Instead of the molecules being attracted to each other, they're now repelling each other.
Right.
And suddenly they're all just kind of, you know, frothing up, coming apart. What first struck me was that, you know, talking about molten metal, and I said, well, wait a minute, you'd have a steam explosion if you had molten metal because you have this water sitting around.
There's all the water, yeah.
And a steam explosion comes because when water becomes steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times. It needs more space.
Right.
That's why you get steam explosions. So after talking with someone about that, I was looking at the tipping top of Tower 2 and all of that frothing that was coming out. I went, wait a minute. This is like the solid material is needing more space, like steam.
Yeah.
Just suddenly expanding. It just needs to get away from itself. Like each of the building particles are repelling each other.
Right. And that's another very interesting point that you make as well about the tippling top, because I can remember watching that on the TV footage of the top of the building suddenly going. And, I mean, in my mind, I was thinking, oh, my God, the top of the building there is just falling off as if, like, the top of it was breaking off. And I didn't even think about the rest of the building going. I just thought, oh, my God, the top of it is falling off and it's going to crash to the ground. And oh my God, the people below and the top of this building has just toppled off. But the top of the building doesn't topple off. It kind of, well, the whole of the building then starts to do something. So it's not just the top that's kind of going, it's the whole of the building starts doing something and kind of going down. And but then the top of it that was toppling over and looked like for sure it was going to kind of fall over
mm-hmm.
and hit the ground and smash into other buildings
it
beside
it.
It stops rotating and then just kind of rotates in on itself in some way. Or...
Right, and it appears to be that it's violating the laws of the conservation of angular momentum.
Yeah.
But it turns out, I believe that it does not violate the laws of physics. As a rigid body, it might, but it's no longer a rigid body. If the rigid body is rotating and stops rotating, each individual little speck can continue rotating, so it still retains the laws of conservation of momentum, but not in the
typical... But just not as a whole body, just as individual parts of
right,
that body.
Right, little particles of it that continue rotating.
Yeah. So that would kind of prevent the whole body from rotating. It would just move it into a kind of minutiae of...
So it appears pieces. At a gross level that this top block starts rotating, and then it may even look like it rotates back a little bit, but stops rotating.
But it, yeah, it just kind of stops rather
as
than...
As a rigid body.
Yeah.
It's no longer a rigid body.
Yeah, yeah. And the really interesting footage as well that you have of the core columns.
Mm.
How many floors was it? You
About 70, that's 70, a, 70 floors.
70 floors of core
it's
columns
well
within the building.
Building
yeah.
Seven.
They seem to, like an outer layer seems to peel from them.
Like a peeling banana.
And then they kind of hold like some kind of drunken sailor for a second.
Mm.
And then they just give up.
They just kind of fade and puff away.
Yeah, become, yeah, it's quite bizarre. And I've heard people, you know, dismissing this as like doctored video footage. But, I mean, you've got it from lots of different angles as well.
And also there's that footage of the chunk falling towards the intersection of Vesey and West Street.
Right.
And then you look at the street, where'd it land?
Yeah, if there's a huge chunk like that, which represents how many floors would that chunk represent? Two or three floors?
At least three.
Yeah, but there's no hole. There are no holes in the road around where these huge buildings were supposed to have collapsed. There's nothing there. There's just dust and paper, like you say. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw all these things flying out.
Yeah, and so we're kind of witnessing like chunks of building turning into smaller chunks, smaller chunks, smaller chunks as they're going down, and they're just placing them, and they keep doing it. They place themselves on the floor as maybe pebble-sized things. So obviously a pebble-sized thing wouldn't be able to be blown a long distance. And that's another thing that you say, that the dust plume...
You can throw gravel pretty far, but then yeah. If it becomes dust mid-flight...
It doesn't go that far.
What did you think of the Bob and Bree video segment?
I thought that was interesting as well, yeah.
It goes out, didn't quite reach the window, and then it goes up.
Yeah, because that looks like a cloud which is going to smash into their building. This is a couple called Bob and Bree, and they lived in a very tall tower block, which was right on the Hudson River, and they were in full witness of, was it Tower One.
Tower One.
As
how far away?
As it began.
A couple of blocks.
To disintegrate and.
But near where the Destin Bridge is.
Yeah, they're in complete shock, and you can hear it on the video. And this huge rolling cloud is just hurtling towards them, and you can hear the shock in their voices as they're saying, "Oh my God, these people have got to run out of the way! Isn't the danger? They're shutting all the windows and everything." But it gets quite close, but then it just, starts going up as if
like rising yeast bread.
Yeah, as if somebody has like thrown a stone at you. You know, like imagine in this film, The Matrix, you know, where, you know, a bullet comes towards you and then suddenly it stops and disintegrates. Yeah, it's as if the particles began to do that. They really had force and were kind of coming towards their building, and then suddenly they became so small that they had no more force behind them.
What was driving them up? Kind of like a force field of some sort, almost. You know, it was like they're on a mission, so they're definitely going up. There's various interesting things like that, and I think that the toughest thing that people have with all of this is they want to jump to an answer. They need an answer. They don't care about the details. They just want an answer.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with this, because if somebody gives you an answer, you don't own it. You don't understand how it got there. You just memorizing an answer, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And as soon as someone gives you the answer, you're going to say, well, you don't have evidence to support it.
Mm.
So we have to look at this evidence. And the more you look at this evidence, you see how weird it is.
Yeah.
Some really strange, like spontaneous combustion or apparent spontaneous combustion in cars.
Mm.
Other vehicles. That the buildings don't catch fire. The signposts don't. Trees don't.
Mm-hmm.
Just the vehicle.
Yeah.
You demonstrated that in that video you showed with the Hutchinson where he had the plastic boat. And
yeah.
I never knew that that boat was plastic. I always thought that boat was metal, you know.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting as well, because I've heard people trying to debunk the John Hutchinson stuff by saying, oh, those fake videos of his levitating levitating right. balls. I hate to say it again,
well,
but the
camera in a cardboard box and turns the box upside down.
Yeah, but he shows evidence of levitating water. Now, how do you fake levitating water? That's going to be a pretty tricky one to pull off. And he's showing this effect. And then when he turns, so when he puts the effect on, the water begins to levitate. And then when he turns it off, you get these weird fires just suddenly sparking up here and there.
Spontaneous combustion.
Yeah, spontaneous combustion on a plastic object. It's not like there's a, it's not metal. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, something.
It's not controlled explosions.
Yeah, it's not
controlled. Okay. Because it's 5 minutes.
Oh. Right, I'm just being told in my left ear here that, we only have 5 minutes left on the show. And so we're going to start winding things up a bit, but give us this point, Judy.
Oh, I was just finding the page here in the book showing these pictures of the...
Page 377.
Which you can't see on the radio.
Yeah, but that was the same
but they're very good.
That he had in the video.
Yeah. I've watched those pictures of John Hutchinson, and yeah, just like I was saying, that somebody who was very much part of the 9/11 truth movement was very adamant that John's videos were like, you know, some kind of magician's trickery, but the evidence of water levitating can't be denied. You couldn't trickery that.
Oh, let me take this opportunity to clarify something. This Ace Baker character claimed he had made a $100,000 offer to John Hutchinson to demonstrate that he could get this wrench to levitate. John said, oh, sure. And I thought, okay, there's some kind of catch to this. And I was thinking that John shouldn't do it because, you know, you play with idiots, you end up with idiot stuff. You know,
yeah.
You know, why do it? And John, oh no, this is, you know, this is fun, easy money. You know, he's innocent, naive, at least presenting to be. And so he signed the contract that Ace Baker offered him, agreeing to do this. And then the night before that was supposed to happen, John had rounded up various people to witness it. Ace Baker called him and said, tomorrow's not going to happen. John had that on the answer machine on his phone. He recorded with a sock talking and put it on YouTube. And he went ahead the next day and did the demonstration with his witnesses. And so Ace Baker owes John Hutchinson $100,000. John Hutchinson came through, but Ace Baker says John Hutchinson backed out of the deal.
Huh.
And because he has something to hide.
Mm.
No, it's Ace Baker who backed out.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, yeah, this is the kind of thing you find. And people like Stephen Jones, who are like pinnacles of the 9/11 truth movement. And it's very interesting when you look into Stephen Jones and the way he, with the whole cold fusion subject, he...
Who came up with that term?
Stephen Jones.
Fusion at room temperature? How stupid can you be? Cold fusion? Ha, ha, ha. Who's going to believe that?
But who were the two guys that had their paper that they were about to release, and then suddenly Stephen Jones came up, like, within days of... That's right, Fleischmann. And, yeah, they were... these guys had years of scientific study that they were about to release, And Stephen Jones gets wind of it and then suddenly releases his paper a few days before.
It's to get the grassy knoll and the thermite. It doesn't work.
It's the grassy knoll, yeah, thing as well. So he gets all the press attention so that when they release their material, yeah, he shows it doesn't work. So that when they release their material saying, oh, well, actually, we found something a little bit different. Nobody wants to know that he's taken the limelight already. And, yeah.
Here's a question I'd like to ask you. I've been, like, you know, attacked from all different directions and then some and smeared and called all sorts of names. She's ugly, she's stupid, she's this, she's that. They never talk about the evidence.
I'd just like to say she's not ugly. No. So stop. Okay.
This book has been out for almost a year. No one has been able to refute anything in it.
Mm-hmm. Where are the court cases around this book?
What?
Where are the court cases around this book if they say it's not true?
They
haven't
refuted any of it.
Yeah.
They only talk about the fellowship. There's a lot of this other noise going around. Why is there so much energy on this? I'm trying to convince people of that.
Yeah, that your book is...
More than I'm wrong. Why?
But do you know what, Judy? If they ever zap your house with this whatever kind of thing they have, paper doesn't burn, so your books will be safe and the evidence will prevail. And on that bombshell.
Would you want to promote some websites or something like that?
Okay, so Judy, tell us where people can get hold of you and follow your work.
DrJudyWood.com, that's DR.
Is there a song we can play out with?
.com. Or WhereDidTheTowersGo.com. It's hard to type because it's in spaces and it's just WhereDidTheTowersGo.com.
Yeah.
And also Andrew Johnson's site.
Andrew's great. Andrew's a really lovely guy. And I must say that... both Andrew and Judy really appealed to me for just their total ordinary, down-to-earth, people who you would bump into in the store kind of appeal. They're not... I don't mean this in a bad way, Judy, but I'm just going to say they're not slick. It's like, you know, you can tell that Judy has not been to media school and... Yeah, she just...
Or marketing school.
Yeah, or marketing school. She tells it like it is. And
the Beatles wrote a song about her.
Just... And you would meet people and just blurt out what you think. I think that's what Judy does. And thank you so much for blurting it out, Judy. You couldn't hold it in any longer.
Pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad.
Take the most of Jude's words.
Take a sad song and make it better.
Yeah.
Remember to let her into your heart.
If you listen, maybe you'll find your good thing. Send it to you.
Make it better. Hey, Jude. Don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better. Found her.